And the officials from SEC and from the Department of Basic Education. We were oversighting our annual report 2012-2013. And seeing that we have ELR students of syndrome, we will be safe 1 more hour. I'd like to know the question further. How long do you need to do this report? 45 minutes is too long. Because if we say 1 half hour, we at least need half an hour for you to speak, a half an hour for the members to question and view the plan. Could you?
Yes, we could do that.
Fine. Thank you. And I have to congratulate SEC on your unqualified report. Although there were findings, but you did very well in 2012-2013 financial year. And with those few words, I'd like to welcome you. But I think it will be important for us to introduce ourselves, that everyone knows who came along with that, and you have to say, you know, who's from the board, etc. And then who's on the audit committee, because we asked the audit committee to be present too. I'm the chairperson of basic education, and I'm Hope Mahas. And I'll start with the Honourable Mushwana.
Thank you, Chairperson. My name is Foni, short for Florence. I'm also a member of this particular board. Thank you.
Thanks, and afternoon, everybody. I'm Silence Makumele, a member of the portfolio committee.
Goedemiddag, my name is Donald Smaas. I was a lead for your committee.
My name is Crosby Moni, a member of this committee. Thanks, Chair.
Good afternoon. I'm a committee secretary for the committee.
I'm Susan Rabini, committee assistant for the portfolio committee.
I'm Jablan Ngobo, research for the committee.
Thank you, Chair. I'm Dennis Bandy, content advisor for the committee.
Thank you, Chair. Good afternoon to the honorable members. I'm Pepe Diachi, DBE acting DJ.
Good afternoon, Chair and honorable members. I'm Zeko Mulelekwa, CFO in DBE.
Good morning, Chair and members of the committee. I'm Enoch Rabotaki, Department of Basic Education, Acting Chief Director, Human Resource Development.
Good afternoon, Chairperson and Honourable Members. I'm Simone Gaya. I'm the Chief Director, Education, Human Resource Management in the DBE.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and Members. I am Randall van den Heffer, the PLO in the Ministry of Basic Education. Thank you.
Good afternoon, Honourable Chair and Members. My name is Songa Vese, DPE Strategic Planning and Reporting.
Thank you. Good afternoon, Chair and Honourable Members, the DG from the Department and the Department officials. My name is Reg Rajraj, CEO of SAIS.
Good afternoon, Honourable Members and Mr. I'm Ella Mukharani from SAIS, responsible for professional development and research.
Good afternoon. My name is Morris Mapinan, Chief Financial Officer SAIS.
Good afternoon, Galen Bowles, ex-co member of SAIS.
Chair, Honourable Ms. Mashishi.
Malolete, Nguruba, Mponchani, and Dikobo.
Thanks a lot for that. I think it does start with a meeting, and it does give space about the effort minutes. Thanks a lot, sir. You can continue.
Thank you, Chairperson. It is again an honor and a privilege for us to speak to our annual report, and we want once again to greet you and the honorable members, the DG and the departmental officials. Mine is to just give a quick background and highlight one or two issues and go quickly to giving you some indication of the registration output and the output in terms of ethical cases. Ella, you are helping me with this performance, so you'll see in my page here which page I'm on. Yes, Chair. I think the background of SACE colleagues are familiar with, and it's repeated on the slide, and I don't want to bore you with that, but this was a good year for us, I must say, and it was also a little bit of a restraining year for us as well. It was a good year in the sense that you know, the minister officially opened our building, and it was a good year in the sense that we made a mark in Africa in professionalizing teachers across Africa. Some years ago there were just two professional registration councils in the whole of Africa. It was Nigeria and South Africa. Now there are six because the council has insisted that we promote professionalism throughout Africa. Next week is a steering committee meeting of this African Forum for Teacher Regulatory Authorities in Africa. So indeed we are taking on board the continent. And it has been a restraining year in some senses because of the fact that we were saving money for this building. You know very well that SACE cannot take a loan, and SACE is, has to save money to buy its own building. That's the only way it can do it. Once we have saved enough, and we are almost there, we will ask the department and the minister for permission to buy the new building. We are almost at that point. Yeah, before I go to the two sections that I want to speak to, registration and ethics, I just want to bring to your attention, as lawmakers, a very serious phenomenon that needs to be addressed, and where SACE comes in towards the tail end of it. And this serious phenomenon is regarding violence in our schools. Now, there are three kinds of violence in our schools, and the first kind of violence in our schools is where you find teachers inflict violence on learners in various ways, psychological ways and physical ways. Lately, you must have checked in the media, and we are dealing with those cases as a matter of priority. Within 14 days, we should be striking off another four teachers by the looks of the allegations against them. The second kind of violence is the kind of violence of corporal punishment. You know, you would find that teachers again are violent. So we have that feature of violence in our profession. The other feature of violence in our profession is violence by learners against teachers. There are two cases lately where a teacher was fondling, where a learner was fondling a female teacher. Another one that everybody knows about where a teacher was being chased by pupils. So that's another kind of violence. And the third kind of violence is, of course, learners amongst learners. And lately you must have read that a learner was killed, and bullying in our schools is on the increase. Chair, I say all of this because SACE can do punitive things to these teachers, can do corrective rehabilitative things, can counsel learners, can send them for guidance and help, but I don't think we as a system are addressing the fundamental issue. And the fundamental issue, in my considered opinion, Chair, which I have shared with the Deputy Minister already, is that we need to teach values in our schools.
I don't think life orientation is serving the purpose that it really should. And I'm saying to the lawmakers present here that some consideration needs to be given for more serious building of character and citizenship in our learners. We are not teaching our learners good behavior. So I leave you with that thought, and hopefully there would be more engagements. We will engage bilaterally with the department again, as we are, and hopefully we get some kind of propulsion from the side of the lawmakers. So that, Chair, I think is a matter, because we are a violent society and we need to address fundamentals of how we could become a peaceful society, a prosperous and a safe society. So while we take reactive measures in making our school safe, I think we need to give a lot more thought to how we could be proactive and prevent violent behavior. Quickly, Chair, I want to move on to the registration slide. And here you have the registration details. We are doing good work as far as registration is concerned. We have got the numbers that speak for themselves. Provisional registration is still at a much higher level than we think it should be. Now, there has always been this worry about if we are registering teachers provisionally and they are being registered indefinitely, are we not undermining the profession? It's a question that comes up. Well, it's a difficult one, because when schools request for provisional registration for underqualified teachers, it is because they submit that they cannot find qualified teachers. So the council is put into an awkward situation in that it has to register them provisionally. But we are now at the point where we want to make sure that these provisional registrations are not indefinite. Council is on the verge of taking a decision to make these provisional registrations, registrations just for a 5-year period. So we are looking into that, and we are trying very hard now to introduce other modernizations like online registration, different kinds of registration certificates, categorizing our register. So there is good work underway, and hopefully in the next financial year, when our financial restraints are a little eased and we have saved enough for the building, we'll be able to accelerate that. Going on to the Code of Professional Ethics, it's an area that we take very, very seriously. Ella, could you change the slide for me, please? We have reached out to educators, and then on the next slide you will check the number of cases that have been received per province. And this is no indication about a high number indicating that the worst teachers are in those provinces. That shouldn't be the case, because some provinces report very well, their departments refer cases very efficiently, and other departments are a bit slower. So one is hoping that we do not use these numbers to come to a conclusion that the worst cases are to be found in a certain province. Then the next slide gives you an indication of the types of complaints. And you will see that the highest one is corporal punishment, followed by unprofessional conduct and then sexual misconduct. So corporal punishment requires, I think, a national discussion on how all of us together could empower our teachers in certain forms of discipline. Then the finalized cases, you will see that we have had to carry over 180 cases into this year. Now, while we've had the resources, the financial resources to complete those cases, we didn't have the human resources. So now what is happening is we are using a lot of volunteers from the teaching profession themselves to help us to prosecute cases and investigate. And in the next financial year, this financial year, we should be able to have no backlog at all with the new approach. Council has taken a decision now where it gives allowances, sitting allowances for professionals to help us with cases, so we don't have to use staff to deal with all of the cases. That is what we have been doing in the past. So we want to make a shift from that, so to make sure that we don't have a backlog of cases. We managed to strike off, I think, 25 or 26 teachers indefinitely. You'll find that in your report. And now we've taken the advice to send these names to the Child Protection Register as well. Because once teachers are struck off indefinitely, they cannot come back into the profession and they should not be allowed to work with children. So besides not being able to teach, we are now, in terms of the agreement with the child protection people, we are sending the names over to them. So Chair, I will stop there and hand over to Ella and then engage with the committee a bit later. Thank you very much, Ella.
Thanks, Chair. I will be reporting on professional development and research simultaneously. With regard to the professional development, we remember that in the last financial year, we reported that we were running the CPTD pilot and it has been completed. Now, subsequent to that, we had hoped that we have started with the full implementation of the CPTD system at the beginning of the previous financial year. But we had, out of the pilot report, to put in place a whole lot of other processes and systems before implementation can be placed. And as a result, we had targets in terms of all schools signing up and also for all the principals and deputies signing up for the CPTD system as the first cohort. In real fact, we started in the last quarter of the previous financial year in terms of rolling out the CPTD system. And as a result, our targets could not be met. You can see that they are very low. But we put in place a whole lot of other mechanisms to make sure that we fast track the entire process of signing up the schools and also the principals and the principals. We have in place the CPTD working centers also at SAY so that all educators come to SAY for registration and in a position to sign up. We also have the MOOC site, which is available on the cell phone so that each and every educator who's got a cell phone can be in a position to sign up without being affected by the entire process. Now, at the moment, as I'm speaking, we are moving towards 20,000 in terms of out of 40,747 principals and deputy principals that we have in the entire system. But in addition, we had to make sure that we engage all the stakeholders and also have visit the provinces so that we can begin to share our plans and have some buy-in and also identify the areas of collaboration and support and clarify roles and responsibilities between states and all the stakeholders, but in particular the provincial departments of education. The other area of focus that we worked on was to also make sure that we establish a team that will be responsible for assisting states as a whole in terms of signing up and orientating all the principals and deputy principals around the CPTD system. The sessions are going on very well, and we are also having a professional development portfolio that they are working on in terms of preparing for their three-year CPTD cycle. As I've already indicated, you can see on the next slide, if you want to test the CPTD self-service portal that is in use at the moment by the educators, you can go on either on the website through www.c.org.za or go through the MOBI site on www.cpt.gov.za. So they either sign up manually or electronically, but what we are finding out is that as much as we intended that we need to have an electronic system, 70% of principals and deputy principals, because of the age, are signing up manually. So it's defeating the purpose that we set for ourselves in terms of making sure that we have everything electronically and minimize manual sign-ups. We thought we'd have time to do the demo, but it's fine. Like in the previous meeting, one of the honorable members requested that we should do that, but we'll do it at another time because we don't have time today. Then, yeah, all in all, we had to, at the end, sign up 545 principals and deputies and 29 schools in the previous financial year because we only focused on the last quarter. But in this financial year, like I've reported, we've moved a lot and I'm hoping that we'll be able to reach our target by the 31st March next year of 40,774. With regard to the evaluated and endorsed professional development activities, from the previous financial year, we have seen that we've managed to achieve 80 out of 150. We've done an analysis, and the majority of programs that were submitted were coming largely from the private providers, and very few from higher education institutions. We've been having discussions with the Department of Education, in particular the nine provinces, to say We need to find a way of them submitting the programs to SAIS, but it's something that I think we'll be able to achieve. In addition, to make sure that we increase the number of providers submitting, we've got a campaign going on radio and also through the newspapers. We are advertising every quarter for the providers to submit their activities, and most importantly, we've just completed a provider capacity research, which will inform us in terms of where the gaps are with regard to provisioning within the system. In terms of quality and research, we have a program going on in terms of analyzing the needs of principals and deputy principals, as we are moving along orientating them on the professional development and the CPT system. At the same time, we are running an administering questionnaire around the needs analysis on their professional development. And these are the areas for now in the initial stages that have been identified. The top five, we are finding that it's issues around financial management, and that is really resonating well with what we are picking up from the cases that are being reported to SAIS as well, in terms of issues around financial management. Computer literacy is true. We are seeing that through the sign-up processes that we've got issues around that, and the remaining ones. The other area that we are working on is a survey on internal teacher migration, and we reported in the quarterly report that in this financial year we'll be producing the final report so that we can be informed in terms of where the mobility of teachers internally. Yeah, then we'll also be in a position this financial year to finalize the provider capacity research, which we started in the previous financial year. We produced the CPTV data report, as I've indicated earlier on, and yeah, we did an analysis of providing professional development activities submitted to SAIS for approval and endorsement purposes, and following publications are available from the previous financial year in terms of what we produced. We've done an analysis on the cases that we received, and we have a professional magazine that we are producing, and unfortunately we couldn't produce two because of the challenges that we had with issues around teacher union disengagement. Yeah, I think I will go through all the things because of time.
Thank you. Morris? Thank you, Chair. I'll take us straight to the financial position, which is known as balance sheet of the organization. It reflects that our total assets increased by 84%, and our cash equivalents increased by 65%. The reason is that we have a growing building reserve fund. It also reflects that we have a 10.5 million, which is indicated there, that what it means is that we had an offer for the sale of the building in Kisasi when we closed our financial year for 10.5, which was waiting for the conclusion. Conclusion means asking our cash and they take ownership of the building, which we'll report later the progress about it. But can I like to say that that offer, when it was about to be concluded, the sale was about to be concluded, a liquidation application was filed by one creditor of the purchaser, so which brings us back to the market to sell the building, still in the market. Included in the current liabilities is 7.7 million deferred and spent government subsidy. This is the money in respect of CPTD. Let me give an explanation why 7.7 was unspent at that time. It was that at the beginning of the financial year, our council was considering the recommendation of the pilot which took place. And after the recommendation came the planning informed by the recommendations. By the time SAIS had to implement the plan, it was already in October. We were 6 months towards the end of the financial year. That's why when we started implementation, as my colleague here has indicated, how we have implemented the professional development, we couldn't finish that money. But what we did, we kept it
as a deferred amount, which means we lose in the financial year. So that money has been budgeted for in this current financial year, together with another 7.3 million which the department has given us. So it comes to the current budget will show 50 million, which will report progress. But what I can say now, that 7.7 million deferred last year, we have already finished it. Now we're spending on the other component which the department got it for us this year. One can say that the financial position of council is very much positive. Then moving to the statement of equity, it shows that our total equity increased by 26% to 59.2 million. The building reserve fund grew 83%, which comprised of approved surplus from the previous years and planned current year transfers. I can move quickly to the statement of cash flows, which reflect that we have a net cash from operations. Our net cash from operations increased by 32%, and was also a decrease in business with suppliers, so which means we spent less on suppliers compared to the previous year. Additions to plant and equipment is 2.3 million, which represents 278% increase, of which the costs are the office location and workstations for additional personnel when we moved from the previous offices, our acquisitions on office equipment increased. Total cash at year end is 49.5 million, which is 65 increase. That 49.5 million is the one which is in our, at the time was in our building reserve fund, which we believe by in the middle of next year we'll be able to be in the position to purchase the building. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, sir. Would you like to add on?
Yes.
Before we start questioning.
Yes, just one point I want to add on is that we have followed the last portfolio committee raised a number of questions and recommendations, and I've been personally managing them, and I want to report to this committee that we have been taking all your recommendations and your questions and dealing with them. There isn't anyone that we feel that we should bring back to you. The other point that I missed, Chair, is to say to this committee that the last council has been disbanded and we have a new council that has been appointed, and at the moment we are still waiting for the finalization of the new chair. So as we speak, I have a distinction of being chair and a CEO of the council in terms of the law. Mm-hmm. It's a privilege I enjoy once in 4 years. I thought I'd bring that to your attention, sir. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for that, Mr. Brinchard. Members, we heard the report update. Is there anything that the department would like to add on? From our department side, Mr. Padache?
No, Chair. We're fine.
Fine. Thanks a lot for that. Any questions on this report? Abacha, Honorable Mushwana, Honorable Mani, Honorable Smile, and then I'll expect Honorable Makubela to speak before Honorable Gina. So I'll start with Honorable Mushwana.
Thank you, Chairperson. And if I were in the classroom, I would conclude that I got position last. But thank you very much for this opportunity to speak first. I do not want to talk. I believe I did not talk on the finance issues, because I think that the members are going to do justice to that. I want to speak on the violence. The violence as reported same health, it would be normal. So thank you for this report, because it's so clear, even those of us who have not gone to school to compile reports understand it very well. The violence issue, is becoming a mess, if I may use that word, in the country. And I think something has been done. The question, maybe before I come with my question, is, haven't we fed them and spoiled the life? I'm asking this to every citizen of this country. Because we cannot avoid that question, even if we don't talk about it because of the law and things that are beside themselves. But the honesty, because there are times when we must speak honestly to ourselves as a nation, because we are bringing up a nation, the youth, the young generation, is the leaders of tomorrow. And I wonder if we're going to be very proud when we look back at ancestors and see what we have created ourselves. If somebody, everybody must go with a question, and then we pass their own and spoil the child. Then that brings me to my first question. Yes, is this violence includes teachers on learners, the corporal punishment, and all those things? And vice versa is an issue of concern. But then there are things, or there are fruits, one of them, the pregnancy in school. The pregnancy. I was driving last week from my home to the airport when they talked of maybe one learner in one school. When you are driving, you don't have a pen. Some of us have to write things and to remember them. We cannot just hold them here anymore. And maybe one learner, if it's not a lie in form for as we speak, are unexpected. My own argument would, or rather my own philosophy would be that this is very the fruit and the branch of any spirit. Pregnant and becoming fashionable. And the learners are proud to be, if you are not pregnant, I'm sure the other learners ask you what's really wrong with you. It's like it's becoming a norm. And something has to be done by somebody. And I don't know that somebody is talking to you, because I think you are very much in touch with the unions and all these other people who are very relevant to this particular issue, so that something has to be done. The next one, I even cover that versus the law, the act forbid. And the act was written by human beings, and when the act goes sour, I think the act must be given back to those who wrote it. Don't tell me I'm sitting this side and perhaps I wrote it, but somebody has to talk. And something must be done about the act. Learners must be taught to be spoken to as human beings. Because if you beat them, that's why they become hitters themselves. I mean, if you beat me every day and I realize that if I don't hit you, then I'm dying, I have to stand up and fight. That's why if you read in the newspaper, to find that very weak women are now fighting their husbands. He beats you today, he beats you next week, next month you decide, I must do something about this situation. And these learners, for sure, may be retaliating. The challenge is that males cannot be pregnant. So the girl child suffers. Because it's a girl and a boy together, one person has to be pregnant. And unfortunately, it's the girl child. And I would fight for the girl side to say that, although it takes two to end up with this situation, we need to deal very harshly with the male child or the male teacher. What is it? Sometimes it's not even the male child anymore, it's the male teacher with the father. We need to come with very strict laws. And then educators come guilty. I see you charge a lot of them, not like 10. One was found. No, it cannot sound guilty, it's 53. Okay, it's different department, so let me talk to that one. The last thing that I was talking to is the retirement age. You said that some educators, because of their age, principals and deputies who couldn't do what because of their age, and I'm checking the retirement age issue. The last time I checked, it was 60, 65. And we moved from there. And if people younger than this prove to be very old to cope, and perhaps you need to propose from that end that we review this age level. Because if people cannot go into machines, then we say, because of, I know that this, most of the time, the nightmare, I don't know what to do with the password which I've decided to let him know to this week. And I know that if I can give it to somebody, I can deal with it. And people say, some of us are born before computers, but if you are born before computers, and computers catch up with you, you need to catch up with them somehow, one way or another. Because we're not coming here and entertain that the educators that are old, like not even be happy in the year, maybe much like that. If they are still allowed to be in the last room, there is nothing older for them. And finally, yeah, on Sunday I'll be 61 and I'll be old. Thank you. And then all your policies.
I'm not an
executive,
but I know what is on the command trying to do. And let's see, no funny remarks from you and from Mr.
I'm trying to give a first
yes, but you are.
To respond.
It's just the report. You're going off the report.
Okay, let me conclude by saying your policy research is commendable. You see, this man's publication. This is something that we never heard of while we made the classroom for us.
Honorable Fani Master.
Thank you.
Honorable Mishwana Shop. Because she's taking all the questions. I'll take Honorable Moni. Then I'll go to Honorable Smiles. Then I'll come to Honorable Makuela.
Thanks, Chair. I don't know whether I should say I have a question or a comment, but I think it's a comment. The types of breaches and offences that are conducted or committed by cheaters are surprising, to say the least. I would imagine that they are actually having the effect of eroding the dignity of the profession itself. And then I think that it's not only the council that should be taking drastic steps against this, but as society also, I think we must do something about discipline generally, particularly around institutions of learning. I'm leaving that one. On the I thought that slides it on this slide of numbers, but I can't see that. But on the slide that is saying statement of cash flows, I think it's the last one. No, it's not the last one. But just above notes. Oh, I know it's going to all over. Yep, okay. Statement of cash flows. It appears here that you have 49 million of cash. I just want to know whether this is not too much cash in your pocket. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Of my question on registration is first, Chair. I see that 5,500 foreign nationals, which is almost a third of the amount of the total for the year. But it's not. Is there sort of the trend in terms of foreign nationals against local? Is there a increasing trend? What is the trend with regard to that? But whilst I'm on registration, is there a record of does SAIS keep a record of qualifications and how can I say? Yeah, the qualifications of teachers, so that they can inform other users of that information, DBE, for instance, with that kind of information. Then Chair, on the, it's just a question for clarity, is the one on the slide, well that's the number, but it's sign up achievements, 10 principals and deputy principal CPD orientation sessions held, focus. The 10 principals and deputy principals CPD orientation sessions held, focused on. So only 10, if I may put it that way, what was the target? What was, and then obviously the achievement. If we don't have a target, then we cannot say well done or, yeah. Chairperson, let me go to the other one is with regard to finalized cases. Yes, I think what we see there, the figures, once again, we are sort of, in terms of comparison, unless I have now to look in the big book, I don't have comparative figures to say yes, we are improving, but what I would like to know is that today says there's a bullet point, today says there's received those complaints and the hearings is 339, resulting in 150 indefinite. Now the to date, does that mean as from your inception? Yeah, you see, that is a minimal, I would imagine. So, Chairperson, that's why we have problems. And maybe some support must come to say to. I don't know where the support will come from, but yeah, that's a concern, Chair. Thank you very much.
Thank you, Chair, for the opportunity. I'm so glad we come for a question. Yes, thanks. Yeah. Just two, perhaps three. Let me have three questions. The first, not on the registration, but on the system of the department, says and so on, are they reconciled? Are you able to tell if they appoint a person now, even before they inform you, who say there's a person there? I know teachers were not supposed to have a choice, they were supposed to be automatically somewhat affiliated. We still have cases where people may not be registering with you as a professional. That is, I think, I'm simply asking that there are people outside of your system. Not because they're not being provided to you for registration, but just on their own, not wanting to come. And provisional registration. Lately, I would imagine that we now have situations where you will have people who are the so-called private teachers who would, upon passing standard 8-9, which is grade 10 now, would necessarily go and teach because the demand was high and there were very few qualified teachers. At some point, we must put a stop or an end to that. Who's supposed to determine that on the basis of what? So that we don't just have this situation continuing. For instance, if a school or government body argues that are appointing this person on the basis that there's no qualifying person, to what extent are you able to verify that? And say the school put an effort to look for a qualified teacher, or what they say goes, simply because you don't have mechanisms yourself to say, but this cannot be true. If you may have a teacher somewhere qualified and so on, and as the person or persons could apply, but somewhat people favor the son of the soil and will be quick to appoint that person and leave qualified people. And when they bring the motivation to you, it's as if they've done everything at their disposal to get a qualified teacher when they couldn't. I'm just saying, do we have any measures to protect them? The two last things is that on your the annual report, we've got two pages, page 87 and 88, which is supplementary information, which could not be considered for the process of an opinion. How did that get to be supplied later on than at the time when it was supposed to be considered? The very last, it is argued on the usefulness of information that the reporting of targets and objectives in the quarterly report and annual report were not always in line with the target and objective set up and approved in the annual plan. Why did we have to have this situation or scenario allowed to exist? Thanks.
We have another question. Chair, we have a few also. But Chair, my first concern, I think I raised between the basic education yesterday, when it comes to the issue of continuous professional teacher development, I think we must agree and accept that basic education we haven't done enough when it comes to that. Then, Chair, the reason why I'm saying that this is a non-standing issue. When we talk of developing teachers, we know that this is the core thing that must be done, and for us to have quality education, really, we solely rely on the development of educators, and it's like a complaint about. And for me, even today, to receive such a report, Chair, to say we can have 3 quarters of a year where we are just dealing with the processes, and this is a new thing. When it comes to this continuous professional development, we're talking of years. It has been piloted for a number of years. I think now it's more than 5 years, we're still talking of piloting. And it's only now that it's still in the very initial stages. For me, Chair, I would appreciate if we can get more, maybe another explanation to say what are the challenges when it comes to this. Looking at the movement is too slow, Chairperson, and maybe we just need to commit ourselves here, we say committing themselves to say really we are going to pull our sources to say we are going to see this thing taking off there, kicking, so that we enhance our system as it is, Chairperson, really it is very much unacceptable. Secondly, Chair, when it comes to the issue of finalizing the cases, yes, I understand they talk of the issues of capacity that they did not have, so that is why they've gone about 108 cases that were carried over. Mm-hmm. But I'm a little worried, Chair, maybe they can ease my concern here, is to say now they are even using the volunteers from the profession. If that can be unpacked, whom are they really using? Who are those volunteers? You know, which pool are you taking those teachers from to come and preside over these cases? And can we, the credibility of whatever is happening in those processes where you are using the volunteers, what, you know, maybe they can explain that one further. I think we can understand. Chair, what is happening before I go to that one? The way the registration is being done, Chair, for sure there are lessons, there are trends that you say you can share with us as and the country to say what can we say with the quality of educators that get into the system, their qualification and so forth. Because when you look at the trend, from listening from what they have been saying, you can see that we have got even quite a number of teachers who are maybe unqualified, that are entering the system, hence they cannot even get to the full, the full registration model. Yeah.
So maybe really if they can just share with us what data are we getting, are we having as a country when it comes to the army of teachers that we have from the observation that they have on their day basis as they deal with such issues. Chair, moving to a conclusion, there are targets that are not met and that are far from being met. Like for an example, the target of 25,000 teachers where they needed to be workshop on code of professional ethics, where you see that about 7,000 was met. And there are others. My question would be, Chairperson, I don't know here, I'll get an explanation whether even then the issue of capacity or like, but the question will always be, when you set your targets, Jay, I think you sit down, you set your targets, having done your internal analysis as to say how much capacity do we have, it might be financially or human capacity or whatever. Because really, I think it's not a good thing to set these high targets, you come and report, we say yes, people are working, but at the end, this is what you are getting. And at the same time, I don't think we'll ever appreciate if you set low targets for you to achieve more. But I think that's the balance that must be struck by all means, is to say target whatever you know that you can, you have capacity to do. Because once it comes like this, to everyone who can get this, even on the road out there, who says is doing nothing, you cannot target so much high and then get far below 50%. So if ever really they can talk to us about this. The other last question before you stop me. Is there anything that you do with after your cases, you have finalized your cases? Yes, I'm leaving those who've been struck off of the system. But what programs really do you have to rehabilitate those teachers that have been found guilty? There's so much everyone has spoken about that. I think now the issue of consent to what is happening out there. Learners, teachers, there's so much. But what are the programs and what can you say? I'm seeing any fruits after maybe teachers undergone those rehabilitation programs. Do you see any dangers and lessons that are learned by that individuals that offend you?
Thanks a lot, Anbu Kiena. Some of my questions were taken was on to speak to your financials. But what I would like to know, this building of yours, in the previous financial year, its valuation was 13 million. What happened? Why did it depreciate to 10? Because I remember you said you were sales at 12 or 13. When we met you the last time. And then on the targets that the Honourable Gina spoke to, the AG indicated that there were certain items that they ordered that could have been unfunded mandates because it did not appear on your APT. They didn't say what it was. Where you did certain things, but it was not on your APT. But it was completed. So just think about it. If it is so or not, thank you. You may answer, sir.
Thank you, Chairperson and the Honourable Members. I must confess the Honourable Members really have an incisive understanding of space and its dynamics. I will take a few questions and then I will ask the Councillor, Ms. Bowles, to see if she has a comment or two to make. Then Morrison Ella, and then the outstanding ones, I will see if I can comment on. Firstly, Chair, the question of violence again. My colleague across referred to corporal punishment inflicted on teachers referred to inflicted on learners, learners retaliating, pregnancy in schools, and the question of punishment of the males. Now, one thing we want to state categorically is that SAIS will not be in a position to support any form of corporal punishment unless the council has a rethink on that matter. We are bound by council's decision to abide by the law unless there is a change in the law. And I don't think SAIS can easily support introducing any kind of violent disciplining methods or physical methods. But let's keep an open mind on that to see how far the law goes. But definitely we feel that people who have done wrong must feel the pinch in some way. But that is not the cure. As I said in my opening comments, we need to teach good behavior and we need to unlearn bad behavior. Just the other day at the South African Principals Association conference, there is a professor, Kalik Osiris. He's a black American who has spent 20 years in jail. And he is now proposing the thesis that good behavior can be taught and bad behavior can be unlearned, which ties up to the point that I made earlier, that we need to teach our children how to live well, how to be good citizens. So while we have these pregnancy cases now, and we will caution the male who are involved and advise the females and try to be preventative, I think we need to teach our children right from an early age the good things to do in life and how to avoid the bad things. It's something that is not happening in our schools, that I can say categorically to the lawmakers. Secondly, I want to just say something about the record of qualifications. Yes, we have got all the qualifications recorded. In fact, Ms. Mokalani will tell you now when she is registering people to do professional development, then they update what qualifications they have. We will get into bilateral with the department and other authorities to see how we could change it for exchange information, because our idea is that professional development must take place on some informed basis. The question about comparative figures, since our inception, the numbers look too low. Yes, you're right, sir. The numbers are looking low, and that is for the 4 or 5 years that we have been involved in this business, although SAIS Act was promulgated in 2000. But we really got to action about 5 or 6 years later after we did the basic preparation for SAIS. But the point is very important, because I don't think there is enough reporting. And even after there is enough reporting, you find that people would drop for unknown reasons, as the report has indicated. So I think we want to develop a kind of a more comprehensive approach where we want to bring out the wrongdoings of our teachers into the open. I said this at the World Teachers Day celebration where the Deputy Minister was present on Saturday. And everybody agreed, even the union president agreed, that all our teachers who are involved in unprofessional conduct must be brought to book without fear or favor. And that was accepted widely. So it is a matter that we need to drive home, because sometimes we are a bit reluctant because of unions and those kinds of ideas to promote the fact. But unions themselves agree that bad teachers need to be brought to book. So there is no problem there. Then the question of unregistered educators. Let me confess, there are unregistered educators. Every now and again we see an educator is battling for registration, having been teaching for quite a long time. And it's unlawful actually for teachers to be teaching when they are unregistered. They are employed unlawfully. So we are writing to all of the departments, and we are now entering into memorandums of agreement with the heads of department and bringing this to their attention, that in many of the schools, schools are quietly employing teachers that are not registered. Some people do it by omission, but others do it by commission. You know, they want to do it so that they can underpay people or bring in their own friends into the profession and so on. So that's another message that we must all spread loudly. We are trying very hard to do that and would appreciate the support from all the other players as well. And this question of underqualified teachers, teaching indefinitely will come to an end. And a very important point has been raised here about verification of these requests. No, we haven't been verifying them. No, honestly. When a school principal puts his stamp, or the head of the governing body puts her stamp, to be saying that we don't have any qualified teachers in this area, this is the only person that we can take, we take that in good faith. We have not, but it is a matter that I want to take back to council to screen these things. Because it could very well be that people are employing people for convenience, you know. And of course, the other thing is that council now has decided that they cannot be teaching indefinitely. So thank you for bringing that matter to our attention. And we will definitely have to follow that to increase our visibility there. Then the question I want to take is the CPTD question about it being too slow and about we're still in the early stages of getting our systems right. One thing we must emphasize is that as we are saying, while we are trying to put the structure and the system in place so that forever you will have a system that people will be able to link up to, right now as we speak, all teachers, including managers, must be undergoing professional development activities. I think it's a point that we must emphasize more, Ella, in that there is a professional development portfolio and all providers must send their programs for endorsement. Ella puts them onto the website as soon as they come, but I think we need to be a little more visible about that aspect of it, you know, to push for and to remind all teachers that they should be getting down to professional development activities in terms of the guidelines that are there on the website, so that people know they don't have to wait for next year or the year after that. In fact, they should be doing it right now as we speak, and if they're not doing it, there is a problem. And recording their progress in the professional development portfolios. Then the question of volunteers. Most of these volunteers are ex-principals, ex-people of high standing that assist us in dealing with ethics cases. So they have a good track record, and council sees a list of them to veto them. So it's not a question of just picking anybody to do assist us in dealing with our cases. We have a database of them, and the names are well known to the council. Registration, what is the quality of educators entering the profession? Give a picture. This is a very hard question, but I'm going to suggest that we need more qualified teachers. It is awkward for me to say that, but I'm saying that in terms of the numbers and the statistics that are there. If you are registering more provisionally than full registration, it means you are getting less qualified educators into the system. Now the answer to that may not be that easy, because for example, schools could purposely be taking on these underqualified educators. By the way, when they take on this underqualified educator, I forgot to say that now our requirement is that they must be enrolled for a teaching diploma. So you don't just, you know, have a matric and say no. We must have evidence of you being enrolled for a teaching diploma, so we know that within a few years you will qualify, and we track that. So we are definitely raising the bar. But the question of what is the state of the teaching profession in terms of the quality of educators, I want to enter into a discussion. We went into discussion with the departments, and I think there is some joint research that needs to be concluded here, because we're not quite sure about what is the shortage, whether people are not, you know, being employed in the area of specialisms, so that we could then make a categorical statement to be saying, yes, there is indeed a shortage of so many teachers. But my own personal view, Chair, is that there is a shortage of supply of teachers coming into the profession. I think the number in my own rough calculation needs to be doubled. Then second to last, Chair, I just agree that our targets must be set more realistic. I don't have a counter for that. It's simple, it has to be done. And in terms of post-case interventions, there are two things that we do, which we will try to step up with. One is we refer to teachers that are found guilty to educator-assisted programs, to rehabilitation programs, to counseling programs, but we have not been monitoring that. We refer them. Now, whether they're going there or not is another matter. And then children do what we have been victims of. We send them for counseling, we make references. I mean, we don't have the facilities or the resources to give it to them, but we send, you give them the details of where they could go, but again, we don't do the follow-up. The only time we do the follow-up is where we find someone guilty and tell them that you must go for anger management, for example, for 6 months in a recognized institution, and you must give us the feedback from that institution, because that is part of the sanction. That one we do follow. But I think the question is broader than that, and that is a matter that we want to take a bit further. I'll stop there and ask the counselor, the executive member, the chair of the registration committee, Ms. Bowles, who is a school principal as well, mm-hmm. to see if she has anything to say regarding any of the points that have been raised before we go to the other two office persons. Thanks.
Thank you, sir. Honourable members, and thank you for the questions. I always find that the insight always so encouraging, and I think that's what causes an organisation to grow, so thank you for that. The question with the unqualified teachers, and I think DB could probably support us in, I know I saw studies the other day that certainly our educators will be probably qualified when they're coming out of HERs, but there's a large cohort of educators that are coming out of distance learning. And that always can be a concern as to the pace at which they will qualify. Are they going to do it within the 4 years? And the actual monitoring and quality of those educators. If I take our biggest distance learning institution, how are they actually monitoring those teachers? So I would like to say yes, that we still can question the quality of our educators. Secondly, SAFE used to, and still, but it's something in, under registrations, we used to give a full qualification to an REQV13, which meant that there was a matric plus a 3-year qualification. As this doesn't happen anymore, it's something that we have to take back now to council to have change in our registration. So we will be having fully qualified teachers. And then perhaps another area of concern, the SACT Act only allows for provisional registration. And so many people have been pushed into that provisional category, where sometimes perhaps we need to relook at it and have this not be conditional. And that's something I will certainly take back. And then I like it is a challenge, the computer IT, and if I think of we had standalone, then we came along with laptops, and now we're sitting with tablets. And I do feel that our older generation do take a bit longer to master and the technology, but the more they're exposed to it, and CPTD may be driving that type of development, you are going to, in the long run, have your senior management of principals and deputies perhaps keeping up with our children. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for that. And I'll hand over to Eleanor.
Thanks. Two questions. Honourable Mushwana, I think Councillor Bowles just asked that main thing response to the issue around age and computer literacy. We are signing up 40,747 principals and deputy principals across the country, and they are doing that manually or electronically. And what is emerging from that process is that the majority of principals and deputies at the age of 50 upwards are finding it difficult to deal with the electronic part. So that is why we are saying, initially we thought the electronic part would be easier for us, but it's the opposite. And we are going back to... Okay.
For her to obey and watch that by doing the opportunity of the game.
Yeah, I'm going to put Gina to finish it and ask them to see my junior.
Thanks a lot for that. Because, you know, it's just like, it's, don't take us too seriously.
Yeah, no.
Yeah.
But also, just to add, also...
Because she was speaking about it, don't take us too seriously.
Also, it's also reflecting the extent at which certain provinces are investing in ICT. Mm-hmm. For example, Gauteng 90% signed up electronically, and we are, Gauteng has got what, plus minus 3,000 principals and deputies, and we are at about 2,300, where 90% has signed up electronically, because all the principals have got iPads in that particular province. Also within Cape and Northern Cape are moving apart with regards to ICT. But there
is commend on that one. And even the principals on the farm schools are so excited with the ICT, and it takes very slow because our old computer, our old laptop.
Yeah. And then Honorable Smiles, the target with regards to this orientation sessions, initially our plan was to have between 10 to 20 orientation and sign-up sessions in each and every province, depending on the number of principals and deputies in that particular province. But we remember that between February and early May, we couldn't do anything with the teachers on the ground because of the teacher union disengagement. And that's why we have lower targets with regards to sign-ups, number one, but also with regards to the orientation and sign-up sessions. So we ended up being able to do 10 through different stakeholders. But if you were calling educators, principals and deputies together with the provincial departments of education, it was a no-go area. Because remember, it was SACE, it was ERC and Interdivisional and department which were affected with regard to that. The CCTV system, Honorable Gina, we are making progress. I think in the next, when we report next year this time, our target will be different because we are implementing according to three different cohorts. Principals and deputies as the first cohort. We are signing them up, orientating them, meeting them to plan through the professional development portfolios this year. January, they are starting their first 3-year cycle and should be able to report. We are intending to have a statistical report but with some quality indicators with regard to the state of our SMT in schools within the country. So that particular report will be coming forward and it will be addressing some of the issues that we are raising with regard to the quality of our management, their retirement issues, their qualifications, where most of them are not teaching, the reasons why they are not teaching, others are. So we are beginning to see a whole lot of issues out of that particular process. So yeah, we are getting there, we are halfway, and I'm hoping that by end of March we should be getting a much better report than we have at this time. Thanks.
No. Thank you, Chair. My first response will be on the 45 million cash, whether that's not too much. It's too little. Why too little?
49 million cash.
Yes, it was not on hand per se as in the operating account. It's the one which is in the reserve bank account intended for to purchase the building. So it's a growing reserve account which our target is 61 million, which we hope by next year, middle of next year, we'll have reached that target. So in on hand, on the operating account, we always have 2 million to pay salaries and creditors on a monthly basis. The next issue is on the annual report, page 87, 88, the supplementary schedules. Which the voters could not express an opinion. In terms of the generally recognized accounting principles, those schedules are not a requirement to be part of the financial statements. So every year you'll see that those schedules, no auditor committee themselves to them because they are not a requirement, but they are added for the purposes of the users of the financial information because they have more details than the required standard of the income statement. It only has 5 lines when you look at it. So, and we're used to the detailed income and expenditure. So those two pages are just showing you the part of the details of the income and expenditure. So for the users, they will easily understand the sub-accounts when they look at that. The billing. The value of the building, we spoke of 13.1 million in the previous year. Every year, all properties have, buildings have to be evaluated to get the value because they appreciate or lose value if we don't maintain them. So ours, when we evaluated it last year, it was at 18,100,000.
Then when we came to sell it, we reevaluated it again. And at that time, the value was still at 13.1. So the sale, when it went to an auction, the bid, the highest bidder was 10.5 million, which means we have a difference of 2.6, which should be regarded as a loss on sale of the property. So on our income statement, it's reflected as 2.6 as a fair value adjustment. It means we're adjusting the value of the property as evaluated against the real value which we were supposed to get on sale. The other one here,
and the targets and objectives in line. Why did it change in the end?
Okay, no, thanks, Chair. In terms of the comment of the under the usefulness of information by the holders, where they indicated that the targets as reported on quarterly basis were not consistent throughout the year, it is a fact that they were not consistent. What happened with the CPTD after the pilot consideration and recommendations, somewhere around September, October, the council had to change its own targets because they worked on the new plan. Then targets on the APP had to change, which later, same time, the Department of Education came as well on board and helped us to adjust somewhere in February, adjust some of the targets, which shows that they were working with us. Then when you change the targets that you have reported on the first quarter, obviously, the targets are no longer consistent throughout the year, but the council was in full control with the assistance of the Department of Education to align the council towards its mandate.
The holidays here spoke for unfunded mandates, which were not on the APP. The same was doing things that were not on the APP.
Yes.
But I think you covered that.
No, thanks, Chair. I since you mentioned it, I was trying to rephrase it and I'm lost a bit to remember exactly how it was worded. So therefore my response may end up not, I'm not tracing it back to see what they said in the previous. Yeah, I can't remember exactly in terms of the unfunded.
And what was?
Yes, I can't remember.
Because the thing that was on Facebook, and it was, which is
something. But I think the point is that we need to adjust the APP to match with it, which is something that we should have done. So that I don't think the committee is resisting the idea that we have sort of adjusted and modernized the APP. But I think that the problem has been, in my view, is that we did not inform the authorities to make the necessary changes. Thank you, Chair. Yes, thank you. Yes, Chair, thank you very much. And I don't know when we are going to see this committee again. I hope to see you more and more, because you really have developed council to the level of maturity it is. So from the side of council and the side of the teachers that we represent, I just simply want to say a very big thank you to the portfolio committee, and I look forward to your continued assistance. Thank you, Chair.
Just in rounding up, I think there was something interesting Ms. Powell said, because as I was listening to the questions from the members, they only five, and I just thought they were very good. You know, she was insightful. Because I was listening and I was thinking about it, and I thought I wanted to speak about it at the end. And the disappointment that we showed when it comes to the CPTD, we wasted with basic education yesterday, speaking to you today, and I think we should, you know, like you said, going not you already started on it, and that there will be a different picture next year. And then the other, you know, when it comes to what is taking place within the schools and what we see in the papers, that's a societal issue.
Yes.
And the president says you know, seeing this fact of the nation address, that education is a societal issue. And I think that's what you should always stress. And, you know, when it comes to our LTC, we have to just see that that continues. Because I know the departments, they are working on these issues. And then also when it comes to our parents, you know, like when it comes to the National Development Plan, they have to become active citizens. And they have to teach our children to become active citizens too. So I think that the departments do speak to, and they're even aligning their programs for next year with the National Development Plan. And I would like to congratulate SACE, because I spoke to the Honourable Dean about your oldest teacher that's 92 years old, that's teaching geography in Mpumalanga, and at the grade 12, we spoke to her, and she's still very clear in her mind about the things she's doing. Then Honourable Dean commented we saw her on TV, driving a car, doing this, you know, doing many things. No, man. You know, this one likes spoiling something serious. But we really appreciate it. Because whatever you said today, when it comes to the conduct of teachers, you said it on at the weekend, and the unions agreed to it. And even everyone that was present. And it will be very important, I feel, that the Department of Basic Education, and you have to, of course, you report to them, that you can look at this qualification and when it comes to specialization in teaching, because there is a need when it comes to PPN. Sorry, but I'd like to thank SACE for this concise report, and then also, like I spoke to you earlier on, you know, just to give us more details on clarity, on certain questions here, and that if there is a need, because if you're going to this international conference or workshop that, you know, you're affiliated to as SACE of teachers, to do it before you leave, that you can hand it over to the department, because you know exactly more or less what you should do. And then Mr. Barachi, how much is it honorable? Mr. Barachi, I will see as the, in HOD that we receive it. And thanks a lot, and I'd like to thank the members too. You can just take a break for 5 minutes because ELRC is waiting on us. Thanks, sir.
I happen to be silent, a member of the Portfolio Committee.
Thank you very much. Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen. My name is Donald Smiles. I'm a member of this committee from the Eastern Cape.
Good afternoon, ladies and gentlemen, honorable members. I'm Nomali Herokina. I'm also the member of this committee. Thank you.
My name is Crosby Moni. I'm a member of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education. I happen to be South African by birth.
Yeah.
Good afternoon, Jay. Javdan Ngobo, researcher for the committee.
Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon all. I'm Dennis Bandy, content advisor for the Portfolio Committee.
Good afternoon, Chair. Alan Brown, Commission Committee for the Portfolio Committee.
Thanks a lot for that introduction. I'll hand over to the ELRC, madam.
Thank you, Chair, for promoting me. Thank you, Chair, and good afternoon, honorable members. I start on my extreme left-hand side. We are accompanied by Mr. Robin. He's an independent member of the Audit Committee. And next to him is Advocate Bono. He's a chairperson of the ELRC, also independent. And next to me, chairperson, is a face that is familiar with the committee, the CFO of the ELRC, Mr. Mushaka.
and I'm the general secretary of the Youth Sydney Sport.
Thanks a lot for the introduction, and I'm sure your members do know the department itself. I won't ask the department to introduce themselves. And we're very happy that you brought your extra with you. Although all members are not here today, the meeting is going on because there's no decisions being taken. But you are going to sit with a very formidable group on the outside, because I like the way they interrogated safe when it came to the work that they are doing. In my introductory remarks, I must congratulate the ELRC on their unqualified audit report. There were findings, but I don't have my auditor report with me. But they showed that there were improvements, because I think with you, the arrow was pointing upwards to show that ELRC has improved. And I'd like to welcome you this afternoon to this meeting where we put oversight you on your 2012-13 report. And we're only going to take 1.5 hours to remain here. If it's shorter, fine. We will give ELRC a 30 minutes to report on the annual report. Your PowerPoint presentation, is that enough? Do you think it's okay?
Chair, we'll try to summarize the presentation because we've got 58 slides. However, we believe that because we had circulated the slides 2 weeks in advance, members that had a chance to go through everything. Therefore, we'll just give an overview of what is contained in the slides. We won't go through a detailed presentation. So 30 minutes will be fine for us. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, madam. And then I'll give the committee about 30 minutes just to ask questions for clarity or to interrogate the report, and I'll give you 30 minutes to reply. And before we start, do the department want to say anything? Fine. The department is going to listen and will hand over to you just to start the report and say, you know, in which order you will, people will be speaking. Thank you.
Thank you, Chairperson. Our Chairperson, Advocate Bono, will do the introductory part of the presentation, which is mainly contained in Section A. I'll do Section B, and the CFO will do Section C, which is the annual financial statement. Then we will conclude the after, Chairperson. Thank you.
Thanks, Advocate Bono. He's from the province I come from.
Yes, thank you, Honorable Chairman and Honorable Members of the Committee. I am not going to bore you with the vision, mission and values of the ELRC. They are up on the bottom here on the presentation that was submitted. Safe to say that the vision of the ELRC really stems from the same vision that is established by the Labour Relations Act, which talks about labor peace at the workplace. Now, ours talks to the improvement of quality of teaching and learning through labor peace. And therefore, we, you know, the vision of ELRC is to ensure that the labor peace between the department as a stakeholder as well as labor unions that exist, which then translates to qualitative teaching and learning at schools. The values that we have adopted deal with professionalism as well as transparency, which is to promote the behavior that is generally accepted to be correct and proper, and that encapsulates how educators are to behave at school. And the other values will deal with independence, accountability, fairness and equity, social responsibility, as well as efficiency. And I think those are quite self-explanatory. In terms of the strategic objectives that we identified as what the council would want to achieve on the year in question, the five of them are up there. The one deals with research and monitoring and evaluation of activities.
And this particular one was not achieved during the current year in question, but is now currently being, it is back on the table, and we are dealing with it. Goal 2, which has been achieved, deals with equal importance, which is attached to proactive dispute prevention and dispute resolution. And essentially, if you interrogate the annual report, one would note that we are dealing with reducing disputes as we go along by creating preventive measures to reduce the number of disputes that are being referred to the ELRC, and ensuring that we have got efficient and effective dispute resolution mechanisms. Goal 3 deals with collective bargaining processes, and we seek to maximize the scope of the parties' shared interests. This is an ongoing process. The management plan, we have set time frames to address the council's underperformance, and we have specific recommendations which come from the Lekgotla, which was held, which are to be implemented in the 2013-2014 year. The fourth goal deals with providing appropriate support and training for all involved in dispute resolution and collective bargaining. It's a two-tier process. One process is for the parties, which in this case would be the Department of Basic Education as well as the labor unions, and those practitioners which are involved in dispute resolution and collective bargaining. And the other part of it is one of our stakeholders, which is the panelists that actually do the work. And you'll see there that it has achieved, and 72 panelists and commissioners have been trained. The fifth goal is we seek to establish sound communication strategies, special initiatives, and campaigns that support and complement the core activities of council. That has also been achieved. The survey conducted on effectiveness of the council's communication strategy has shown that things are getting better. The last slide of the presentation that I'm going to deal with deals most importantly with the legislative and other mandates. Now, we all know that the Labor Relations Act establishes the PSCBC, which is the Public Service Coordinating Bargaining Council, in terms of Section 35. And Section 37(2) allows the PSCBC to designate sectors. Now, there are four sectors. The one is safety and security. The second one is public health and social development. The third one is the Education Labor Relations Council. And the fourth one is General Public Service, GPSSPC. And that's for everybody else who does not belong on the other ones. We are the only bargaining council that subscribes to the Public Finance Management Act. But we do, because we report to Parliament, and we are currently registered as an entity that should. We are also governed by the Employment Educators Act, and part of the legislation that we apply in the Council, so far as FET colleges are concerned, is the Further Education and Training Colleges Amendment Act of 2012. Now, the other mandates really deal with the service delivery agreement of the Minister of Basic Education. And some of the goals that are in that plan are, relate to labor issues and are part of the mandate of the ELRC. And lastly is the OMS ELRC Action Plan of 2014, which is towards the realization of schooling 2025. And so in a nutshell, that's the background and the legislative mandates that we operate under. We are, however, trying to address the issue of being the only bargaining council that has to come and court. We are seeking a legal opinion on the matter to see how we take the matter forward. Part of the challenge is that before the Labor Relations Act 66 of 1995 was enacted or came into law, the two bargaining councils, being the ELRC and the Safety and Security, were already in existence. Mm-hmm. And the legislations that were there, which covered them, were subsequently repealed by the enactment of the Labour Relations Act, and these were part of the, you know, the anomalies that we are trying to deal with. Thank you, Honourable Members. Thank you, Honourable Chancellor.
Thank you, Chair. Chair, in terms of the second part of the presentation, this is just done for the purposes of following the guide in putting up the annual report. But the information is not new to the members because we had presented on it when we came down for the presentation of our APP for 2013-2014 financial year. And Chairperson, having said that, perhaps I should take the opportunity of saying it up front that we want to report to the members that the report that has been prepared based on the 2012 approved annual performance plan. Therefore, you would note that despite the fact that there were concerns that were raised when we came for the 13-14 APP in terms of how we had structured our targets, in terms of how we had expressed the values in percentages, in this case, we're still showing that because we are compelled by the regulations from the National Treasury to report in terms of the approved APP. However, the changes that were suggested when we came down to do the presentation on 13-14 financial year will only be shown when we come back for this current financial year annual report. So I think it's important that I raise that up front, Chairperson, so that members do not feel that we are still showing things that they had corrected when we were here the last time in April. Chairperson, having said that, we are showing the same focus areas in terms of our core operation dispute management services, where we say we want to focus more on prevention of disputes as opposed to being reactionary, where we only deal with the resolution of disputes. So we have listed the approaches that we are intending to take, wherein we focus more on capacity building insofar as parties as well as dispute resolution practitioners. We also highlighted that this year we were intending to establish dispute prevention committee in all provincial chambers, and I can safely report to the Chairperson that we have done that within the first 2 months of the financial year. So when we come back next year, indeed we shall have achieved on that area that we have highlighted. So in terms of the dispute resolution, there too we had reported that there are two specific areas that we highlighted as a cause for concern: the issues around appointments and promotions, and we also take full cognizance of the role that is played by the school governing bodies as empowered by the South African Schools Act. However, we are doing our part as the ELRC in terms of addressing the challenges that emanate from the role that is played there. Chair, we have also focused on the dispute involving a child as a victim. I think we also addressed this issue the last time when we came to say what differentiates the role that is played by the ELRC from that which is played by SAIDS. And we clarified that our role is only insofar as ensuring that we attend to the disputes when they are referred by the employees affected. SAIDS deals with the other aspects of it. Chair, having done that, we move quickly to collective bargaining, where we are saying we are looking into issues around temporary educators. But we also need to highlight it that towards the end of this part of the presentation, we will see that we have highlighted some areas that we see as future considerations. And those areas are informed by the current discussions in terms of formulation of legislative changes. Because we are of the view that as the ERC, the envisaged changes that are currently proposed in terms of the Labour Relations Amendment Bill might have an impact on the issues around temporary educators. But even when the Act is promulgated, I mean the bill is promulgated into law, we will see how then that affects our operation as the council. The other area is around the incentives. We're saying that we know the fact that currently a greater percentage of our disputes is emanating from the issue of the incentives, and that is currently managed through a policy. The issues around conditions of service, we also addressed that at length the last time when we came. When the Chairperson of the ELRC was presenting earlier on, he did indicate that this year we have specifically identified areas that we will be conducting research on, and those areas are cited on the presentation, Chair, which is ECD and RPM. Chair, in terms of the management of the Council of Issues around governance, we take full cognizance of the weaknesses that exist insofar as supply chain,
management issues, wherein even the report of the Auditor General, it has been highlighted that we are still found wanting insofar as the establishment of a unit that will deal with supply chain management issues, but we are dealing with such. So we also highlighted the need to focus on career and succession planning strategy. Again, that too, if you look to the section on our report that talks to human resource, you'll see that there might be a cause for concern insofar as high turnover rate. And we have a view that once we have that strategy approved and implemented fully, we might be able to be in a situation where we retain staff and deal with this issue of the high turnover rate. Here, we have highlighted the issue of the fixed income. The last time when we came, we indicated that our income is solely generated from the levies that are collected from both parties, being the employer and the employee parties, and currently it's posing a challenge as far as we are concerned, as it is fixed and the cost is escalating from year in and year out. Chair, I've mentioned the changes to legislation insofar as future consideration. The issues around Higher Education and Training Laws Amendment Act, we cite that because there's a category of educators, adult education and training educators, which we used to refer to them as ABET educators. That act affected the way we deal with them because now the powers that are being shared between the provincial HODs and the Ministry of Education, which was not the case previously. The amendments to the FETC Act 16 of 2006, which now is Act 3 of 2012, is also affecting our operations insofar as the scope of the council. Chairperson, having presented that, I move now over to the annual report. I'll skip through the purpose of the program because that information is a given. Chairperson, in terms of the achievements in disputes, we still found short of achieving the 100%, but I can safely say that there is improvement if our target is 100%, because previously we were less than 97%, so we are only short of 3% insofar as the first strategic objective. The second one, Chair, we are at 51%, and we are saying that we are doing our level best. However, there are issues around postponements that at times are beyond our control, wherein the constitution of the ELRC provides that we grant such if there are valid reasons for parties to request postponements. In the case of a person being booked or sick by the doctor, the constitution provides that we give such, provided that we follow the constitution to the latter, wherein there's consent from the other party, which is the respondent or the applicant, either way. So that chairperson is something that we're trying to manage. However, we have to tread very carefully not to be found to be flouting our own constitution. That really is how we deal with such matters. Chair, in terms of disputes that involve children, our target there was 70%, and we're reporting that we've achieved 50%. Mainly because the matters take time for them to be concluded or to be finalized. There is no case that has been finalized in a single sitting because it involves a range of issues. We have to appoint intermediaries. We have to ensure that we get venues that are appropriate to protect the identity of the kids and everything that is involved in the process. In terms of prevention of disputes, Chairperson, we had a target of 60% of grievances finalized by the provinces, because grievances are dealt with at the level of the employer-employee, which is not necessarily the competence of the ELRC. And we are reporting there that we are unable to get to the acceptable level of such, mainly because we rely on the reports that should be submitted to ourselves, because we do not have statistics in terms of how many grievances were referred to the employer and how many were resolved. Therefore, we only received reports that then gave us an indication that we can safely indicate that we've achieved only 20% from the planned targets. Insofar as the training and development, we had planned to train 240, and we achieved 239, which means we're only short of one. Professional development and training, our target there was 70, but we had 72, mainly because there were two additional panelists who had wanted to join or to apply to be accommodated in terms of our list. The referrals referred to the council, the referred disputes, we had a total of 673,
am predominantly related to ULP promotion and appointments. I have made mention earlier on of the fact that we do take cognizance of the fact that a greater percentage of our disputes is around the issue of promotions and appointments. But out of the 673, the only disputes that were legal, if I can use the term, that were sent to the LRC, referred to the LRC, was 395, which are the disputes that were in jurisdiction. The 192 was out of jurisdiction, and the 86 had to be determined through condonation, and that process too is regulated in terms of our constitution. The pie chart is only showing the referrals in terms of the provinces, and we can see that the leading province in terms of the referral is KZN at 19%. Sorry, it's Gauteng at 20, followed by KZN, and likewise, I think the least is two provinces, is Mpumalanga and Northern Cape. Chair, I've already mentioned this breakdown insofar as the high number being for promotion and appointments, 252 alleged unfair dismissal, 97 are ULPs, 70 being interpretation of collective agreements, 42 basic conditions of employment act enforcement, 17 sexual offences involving a learner, and we had one dispute that was declared as national. Disputes by outcome is a matter of the figures, Chairperson. We are showing how many arbitration awards we had issued in a period under review, and we had settled 69 at arbitration, 32 at conciliation, and 81 was withdrawn. Withdrawn 32, withdrawn at conciliation, and 49 withdrawn at arbitration. 45 were dismissed, 22 at arbitration, 23 at conciliation, 27 rulings were issued. Shall we, from time to time, our awards are taken on review to the labor court. We are showing the distribution in terms of how many per province were taken on review, KZN being 8, Gauteng being 6, and the least being 2, and Mpumalanga. We were not taken on review on all the awards that are issued for the province. Chairperson, having identified the gaps or the weaknesses in terms of achieving our targets, we have highlighted the areas that we feel that we need to embark upon to overcome areas of underperformance, which is the provision of practical training to DRS practitioners. I've made mention of it earlier on, issues around capacity building, and also to try by all means to minimize postponements, despite the fact that they are provided for in our constitution, and also encourage panelists to enforce clause 6.64.7 of the LRC. That clause too talks to postponements that are applied for in the hearing itself, because at times parties to circumvent us implementing the constitutional provisions, they go to the hearings and apply in the hearing itself for a postponement. So we encourage our panelists not to grant postponements, because we have case law in that regard that there is no party that is entitled to postponement in the hearing. They must always go to a hearing having prepared that the matter will proceed. I've made mention earlier on of the issue around us having to secure appropriate venues for hearings where a child is a victim, the appointment of intermediaries, a need for us to increase the panel of conciliators, arbitrators and interpreters, and ensure that we monitor non-compliance by panelists, because earlier on I made mention of the fact that at times they grant a lot of postponement in the hearing. Chair, insofar as professional development, I reported it earlier on that we provide such, and we had a target of 312, and we achieved 311, so we fell short of one. Only one person did not attend our scheduled training. Collective bargaining, Chairperson, I'll keep the slides that talk to the purpose and move straight to the achievements or the non-achievements. Chair, we had planned that we would have 20% of the agreed matters agreed to, and only 10% of such were agreed to. All the others are currently work in progress. They too were included in the APP when we came to present. Insofar as 90% of distribution of hosts, we think we have not achieved, mainly because for us to be able to say we have achieved, we must have received reports from all provincial chambers insofar as the ELRC the role monitoring, because I need to put emphasis on this one. It's a matter of consultation, it's not bargaining. So we only monitor as the ELRC if the posts have been declared, if the posts have been distributed. Now you get instances where the information is not informative enough for you to make a determination that it's at 90% or below 90%. Change of Science Research Services, we had put there an objective, attend education conference. And what informed this objective or the target was one of the issues, residual issues emanating from OSD for educators. There was there in one of the collective agreements that there should be an education conference that is convened to identify areas of research. Now we were not in a position to achieve this, mainly because the conference was not convened, Chebelsin, but there was no way for us that we could have left it out, because if it's in the agreement, we have an obligation to ensure that it's put as planned target. However, for it to take place, we need parties to take a decision that this is the date that we want for the conference and so forth. Chair, in terms of the collective agreements that have been concluded, we have highlighted them there. The strategy to overcome areas of underperformance, we had convened a pre-bargaining workshop where the agenda for bargaining or the area, the agenda items were reprioritized to make sure that there is a management plan with agreed time frames wherein it will be implemented in this current financial year. Insofar as the provincial chamber chairperson, we focus more on monitoring and the monitoring of implementation there. But however, there are issues that would be peculiar to them that from time to time they would enter into collective bargaining on. So insofar as evaluation and planning, the first one, which was the planning session, 8 provinces achieved with the exception of Limpopo. The second one, 3 provinces achieved with the exception of those Free State, Gauteng, KZN, Limpopo, Northwest and Western Cape. The third one, consultation concluded in the second term, 8 provinces achieved with the exception of Limpopo. The information sharing our employee awareness program, we have an achievement from 2 provinces and the rest have not achieved as detected there. The number of disputes minimized, 7 provinces have achieved with the exception of Gauteng and Mpumalanga. The safety at schools, which is a cause for concern to date to everyone, we had 5 provinces achieving, KZN, Limpopo, Mpumalanga and Northern Cape not achieving. Skills development, again, when we came down for the ADP, we clarified what is the role of the LRC insofar as that matter is concerned, as it is dealt with in other forums, not necessarily at the LRC level. So we have achieved in 8 provinces, with the exception of KZN, employment equity. 4 provinces achieved, with the exception of those 5 provinces listed there. Performance management, educators are evaluated, 6 provinces achieved. 3 provinces did not achieve. Share post provisioning, 8 provinces achieved, 1 did not achieve, which is mistake. Implementation of collective agreements, as listed there, 8 provinces achieved, with the exception of KZN. The pillar matters, 5 provinces achieved, with the exception of the 4 listed there. The issue around temporal educators, 8 provinces achieved, KZN did not achieve. In terms of executive services, we focus mainly there on 3 areas of operation. We are on facilitation services. We have, it's linked to the disputes presentation where we talk about training on dispute prevention and resolution of provinces, I mean of disputes. We have provided that in 9 provinces. We provided facilitation in the Eastern Cape, which resulted in the collective agreement that they concluded in the appointment of temporary teachers. The other one, Chair, talks to us issuing communique to the provincial, to respond to communique submitted to us by the provincial MECs, HODs, or the trade union, and we can report that we did not receive any request for facilitation for the period that we are reporting for. Chair, insofar as our audit opinion, we are proud to report that in all the years that we were declared as the Schedule 3A public entity, we have always received unqualified audit opinion, and we've got our CFO to thank for that. And I also need to highlight through to you, Chair, through the member, that this is the last year that our CFO will be with us, as he's going on retirement. So next year he will not be with us. Chair, insofar as communication services, we are of the view that we have achieved that which we had set. We are communicating with the stakeholders through publications, New Negotiator and Labour Bulletin. We have also mentioned earlier on when we were reflecting on the achievements against our strategic objectives that we have conducted the market research. We will make the information available to our stakeholders so that they can see what are the views of educators about the ELRC out there. We have also been participating in stakeholders' activities in the way of trying to market the ELRC and to create awareness out there. In terms of corporate services, Chairperson, I'm not sure how am I doing with the time. In terms of corporate services, Chairperson, we had those listed there as the strategic objectives, where we want to say that our intention was to maintain and improve the finance and administrative system, and we have achieved the second one. We say no major disruption to operation, and we have achieved that. The maintenance of good labor relations, that is now at the staff level, we have also achieved that one, as we have had zero grievances referred to us. The training and development of staff, we had a target of 80% of our employees. We only received a request from staff or recommendations from the managers to train 60%, and as such 20% were not trained. The other objective, Chair, is in terms of ensuring a healthy and safe work environment, there too we have not had any incidents reported or such. The maintenance and improvement of the premises and security, there we are also reporting that we are of the view that we have achieved. In terms of information technology and communications, we note the audit findings. However, we are saying that we have started a process wherein we have approached State Information Technology Agency to assist us in terms of the gaps that have been identified from both the internal and the external audit by the Auditor General. We say in terms of achieving or addressing the shortfalls, we're looking at the issue of ensuring that the supply chain management unit is established and we will be able to address the issues around procurement, which we feel at this point in time are a cause for concern for everyone involved in the operations of the organization. We also highlight the fact that we are of the view that other performance in some areas is mainly due to a slow process of filling the vacant positions, which was linked to the outcome of the work study that had to be done before the organogram could be populated. And that too, Chairperson, last bullet talks to the same process, and we are envisaging a situation wherein after the report has been presented, all vacancies are considered to be critical for the operations of the organization will be filled, Chairperson. Insofar as capital expenditure, we have only one major project that we have identified, which is the management of the property and assets of the council. We think that this has not been achieved mainly because we had to get EXCO to revise the specification for the building refurbishment. Therefore, the CAS team has started doing the work. However, we have not appointed the contractors to really start with the process itself. We were still in the discussion the year that we are voting for, in the discussions in terms of dealing with the specification and also putting a process in place. Chair, I thank you. That is the end of my part.
Thanks a lot. I'm over to the CFO to do the finances. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Honourable members of the Portfolio Committee on Basic Education, my presentation will be brief and to the point. I'll cover only the four areas. I'll cover the funding model, and I'll also look at the financial performance of the ERC and also how we have funded the operations that have been reported on earlier on by the General Secretary. And then I'll end up by looking at the health of the ELRC.
In terms of the funding model, we look at the uniqueness of the ELRC as a bargaining council, where the funding is derived from the contributions coming from the employer and the employees. And that is why on the slide which has been projected, we talk about the number of contributors. And they have remained constant if we look at the past 3 years. 411,000, 414,000, and 411,000. So it has been constant. As the actual amounts received at 49 million has also remained constant. The deviations, we consider them to be not material, they're all less than 1%. Any differences between those 3 years. Now looking at the financial performance in terms of the finances, utilizing the income received, the total income relates to those contributions that I spoke about in the funding model, and we look at the total expenditure relating to the total income. If you look at the 2011 financial year, in terms of the operations, we ended up in a deficit, which means we had spent just under a million more than what we had received in terms of the income. However, it was not a crisis because we do account for interest that we received separate, and that interest did cover that deficit. Since then, we have seen the operating differences ending up in surpluses. In 2011, the previous financial year, we ended up with a surplus of 1.7, and the period under review on which we are reporting today, we see we have an operating surplus of 5.4. If we add on the income coming from the interest of the money that we have invested, we end up with a 10 million surplus for the current financial year. However, since we are not really in the business of really making profits or surpluses, that might be an indication of maybe something that is going wrong. However, I need to point out that even those surpluses did not affect the delivery of the service of the ELRC. It did not compromise the operations of the ELRC. If we then go over to the funding of those operations, I have given here in terms of the broad programs that I might say we have in terms of dispute resolution, plus what DRS stands for, and then training, etc. What I've indicated is what we had budgeted for and what we actually spent. Now, under the percentages, if you look at the budget percentage, what we're saying is how much of the funding was budgeted, or what percentage of the total budget was allocated to the different categories that have been shown there. The highest percentage, if you look, is the last one, which is we allocated 85% of staff cost based on the approved funded posts. So that was the 85%. However, when you look at what we actually spent, we ended up spending less than what we have allocated. We spent 33% in terms of staff cost. The next highest went to the dispute prevention support services, which is the third line item, which basically always would be higher in terms of funding those operations, which in layman's language relates to full-time shop stewards. It is the funding of the secondment of full-time shop stewards, 120 nationally to the ELRC. The next would be going to the two core operations. 10% went to dispute resolution and 10% went to collective bargaining services. Now in terms of the actual, we have realized that again, dispute resolution used 14% of the actual money that was spent. Collective bargaining remained more or less within the percentage allocation. 10% was allocated to collective bargaining services, and of the actual amount that they spent, they also spent 10% of the total allocation of funding. And support services basically ended up at 14%. And in total, we had budgeted for a 59 million, and we ended up at 43 million. So there was an underspending of about 4 million, which relates mostly to what has been alluded in the presentation on the performance. The bulk of it went to research services, which never happened. So funding was allocated, research services never happened. So I think if we look at the allocation, we learn from that it's a fair allocation to the different operations, including the support services. Now, lastly, if we go to the health of the ERC, in terms of liquidity, which is, are we able to pay our short-term debt? The ideal ratio normally, which is generally acceptable, it should be over one. And if you look at the cash situation in terms of the annual report, we are sitting at a cash situation of 110 million. And we are having current liabilities of 52 million. So if you take the difference between the two, we still end up with an ideal ratio, which is over one. That is, we'll still be left with money to run the operations if we had to pay off that current liability. Fortunately, we do not have any long-term liabilities within the ERC. In terms of solvency, maybe looking at our survival in the long term, I think we still have many more years to go. We are in a very solvent situation, and we are not likely to become insolvent, and I think we'll remain insolvent as long as labor peace is needed in education. Thank you very much. And maybe in conclusion, let me look at the future challenges in terms of from the finance point of view. I think the revenue, it was alluded on earlier in terms of fixed income, that was put in as a challenge, and we have to ensure that within that constraint of fixed income over years, we need to manage that and also take budgetary constraints into consideration. If you look at the levy increases, which is the funding model of the ERC, the last increase that was agreed upon was way back in 2007. So since then, our income has remained static, and it has been a challenge that we have to manage our budget within those constraints. In terms of expenditure, I think we will be looking more closely at procurement and contract management, and also expenditure management, and also if you look at the fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we seem to be having an upper hand when it comes to that, in as much as what is under the control of the ERC. So we hope not to minimize, but we hope to eliminate fruitless and wasteful expenditure. And other challenges, maybe lastly, they will relate to the performance audit. Performance audit is now going to be forming part of the audit opinion, which now means we have to ensure that we don't get qualified in any of the two areas, whether it's performance information or financial information. If any one of them doesn't meet the requirements, then we will end up with an unqualified auditor. We would like to keep that standard for the same for the future when the performance audit will then form part of the audit opinion. And lastly, maybe the conclusion will be handed over to the chairperson to conclude our presentation. Thank you very much for your attention.
Honorable
chairperson and honorable members, I'm told that the characteristic for finance people is dingy. So essentially the ELRC, for as long as we have people like the CFO around, will always have money to survive. In conclusion, the 2013-2014 financial year, in our view, heralds a new period of sustained improvement, and Council is much appreciative to the oversight role played by this committee, and we'd like to thank you for playing that role and for ensuring that we stick to the prescripts of the law and we function efficiently and effectively. Thank you. We'll be taking questions with our stakeholder, 50% stakeholder, the Department of Basic Education, just in case some questions we might throw. We are here with our partners, which is the GBE. Thank you.
Goodbye. It will be for me to decide.
Oh, sorry. Okay,
yes. So you want to take over because you're not okay. I would like to thank
the ELRC, the report was very comprehensive, very interesting, and even, you know, not conclusion, the future challenges that the CFO spoke about. It's the first time I'm hearing about, you know, the performance of an audit that's brought up by any entity or department, because I know for the next 5 years, ages of the will be looking at the 3 E's when it comes to performance, audit, efficiency, effectiveness, and economical, because they came to us to speak about it. So he's leaving, but he's very puts you into the future. And I'll open for questioning, and I'll start again as we did in the previous meeting. I'm starting with the Honourable Mshwana, then we go over to Honourable Moni, and then it's Honourable Smile, if he's still here, and then it's Honourable Makubela, and then Honourable Tina last. Thank you. Honourable Mshwana.
Thank you, President. I was tempted to reserve my questions, but I have one question, which cannot be reserved. You see, my understanding, please take me on board, is that you will be receiving disputes from courts, and most of them would be on employment, taking place, that has been said to you. The report is silent, very much silent about the SGP. And I think they have a lot of say. Besides that, I don't know why we, unless if you have given to another symptomology, which I understand, I was looking through, what are they doing, where do they come in? You know why I'm coming up with this question? You know our experts are safe course. I think they remain public. But are you aware that they are run like private schools? Because of the SGB. You see, the SGB has power. I don't know who, somebody somewhere must be with those powers because they are out of order. It's like you can't change a public school and make it a private school just because you have been given power as an SGB. I don't know how to put this, but it's very painful. It's painful for the people down there on the ground. It may not necessarily be painful to most of us in the day, but it's such a mess. People are, they don't know where to swim, because when you talk to employment, if an SGB member will come and say, we don't want this one, it goes, you know, it goes. And where is Senate? Now the question is, these powers, who is supposed to deal with it? Because definitely the response of the SGBs. It doesn't matter what, who says where, but the fact is that they are very much unfair. The SGBs have been given powers which they cannot handle. And they have the power. See, if you give somebody powers, then that person cannot handle power. The whole country goes down. And the SGBs, I have one question. This others, who is not very much of an issue. And as a rider to that, not talking of the SGBs, but your structure, you talk of employing critical positions, if I heard it correctly. If I'm not putting words in your mouth, job creation has never been a challenge for an individual. You know, there are people in this country who believe that for jobs they must go and ask the president of the country, because his only thing was to say that these are the jobs that are going to, you know, just do it. I don't even have to. But you know, who is really responsible? It's everybody, you and I, especially the SGB, employment. Something must be done, and I'm giving it to the labor relations. That's my last hope, or our last hope, is some concerned people in this country. Yeah, it may not be very clear, but philosophically help me, I guess. Thank you.
You're not going to say anything? And members, behave yourselves, please.
And when it comes to that very first question, I don't want you to pass it to the department. Speak to yourself, because there's many disputes when it comes to appointments and other things at schools. Honorable Smile?
It's me.
Sorry, I forgot to get move in with Honorable Bonnie first.
You've forgotten my name is Crosby Moore.
You know, these people are tired now, but they just smile. And I tell you.
Yeah, that's it. Maybe on behalf of the committee, I should express appreciation for the fact that the council has money to finance even their future plans. Congratulations. I had occasion to look at the organogram, then the report. Then what I noticed is that at the provincial level, there's only two people. The provincial manager and the provincial administrator. Beyond and above those two, I'm sure it will support staff, people who cannot make decisions. And then if that is correct, I deduced that you don't have the requisite capacity at that level, because I've noted that you deal with more than 1,000 disputes. Or you dealt with more than 1,000 disputes in the period and I review. Secondly, some people lost their applications to review rulings that you made against them. And the courts have dismissed those applications with cost. Just for my interest, have you collected those costs? Lastly, page 149 of the annual report, there is an issue of over expenditure, under expenditure, I mean irregular expenditure and under expenditure, if that is correct. And then it looks like somebody wants action taken against individuals who have committed those offenses, if those are offenses. Then there's something that says no action was taken. Can I be clarified in a layman's language? Thank you.
You got all the questions. The one was about 149. Honorable Smiles?
Thank you, Chairperson. Chairperson, first of all, let me thank the presentation as well. With regard to strategic outcome goals, I just need to sort of ask what I don't have a sort of a request for the goals to be changed. It's just to check whether productivity of teachers especially is considered to be a strategic goal, because in the other unions or other staff you will always hear productivity against some other matters in the labor relations from the employer side especially. So that's the one question. Chairperson, and then temporary teachers, temporary educators, and also incentives and those, the collective bargaining services. Chairperson, once again, a question, whether the demand of and supply against the background of the request for temporary teachers, whether demand and supply of supply of teachers is the business of this organization. Then quickly with regard to I've seen that labor peace, yes, is the main mandate
And I see that the prevention of disputes and also solutions to disputes is the services that is forthcoming. But Chairperson, looking at what the AGS has indicated, the non-achievement, which is, I think I speak under correction, is almost more than 30% of what has been predetermined objectives has not been achieved. Now, Chairperson, how is that non-achievement, you know, impacts on achieving labor peace? That is a question that I think the ERC can explain to us. Then lastly, the Chairperson, is on the finances. Let me also say thank you very much for having you know, a legal position. Well done. But I just want to say, and I'm not saying this in whilst I'm praising you, and then I'm just also fighting with you on the other end. It's just as a matter of trying to understand. I want to understand, if you have not achieved 30% and you have 110 million in the bank, should you not rather spend some of them, 110, to make sure that, you know, you achieve? So, yes, on the good on the other end, but the question on the other side. Yeah. Thank you, Chair.
Thanks a lot. I think I must join those who have already appreciated the report. And then go on to pose a few questions. On the conference that wasn't held, I think the information given to us may be slightly different to what I think the documentation was saying. But I was under the impression that conference couldn't be held because there were no issues relevant for that conference. After that, Council already planned to have a conference without knowing whether those issues will be there or not. It was in anticipation for that. If I ever just share, I may come back to that reference in terms of the pages. The other, in terms of the findings by the Auditor General, there's an argument that when 500,000 was involved and competitive bids were required, as well as quotations, that wasn't followed. How does that come about? Do they want to understand the circumstances in that regard? The other is that the levy income was not collected from FHC colleges. Yes. And that constituted non-compliance in terms of the founding agreement. Why is it like that? Is it owing to capacity? Is it owing to reluctance or defense by the colleges? What exactly is the issue in that regard? It is again argued on that particular year under review that this entity has not established a separate SCM, the Supply Chain Management Unit, under the office of the Chief Financial Officer, particularly with the relevant skills and experience. So that it may be there, but we may not be talking to that which may not have requisite skills and experience to perform their tasks, and that gave rise to numerous instances of irregular expenditure and non-compliance with the SCM legislation. To me, that becomes a very serious matter. And the action plans that would have been there to deal with that by management to address the deficiencies was not done, it was not implemented. The last one is that, I mean on the Auditor General issues, is that the accounting authority did not adequately monitor compliance with the laws and regulations, and that resulted in the risks related to procurement not being evaluated and so on. So I thought those are key, and we may want compliance in that regard. So the main need to explain or share with us what might have led to that. Just the last two, Chair, it would lead to the targets, most of which have not been achieved, owing as the explanation or explanations went, owing to the fact that parties were not on board or could not come handy in terms of handling those issues. Issues, for instance, that relate to employer-employee relationship, where ELRC does not have total control. And I'm wondering, I think I noted another one or several of those. I'm wondering why do we have targets that ELRC itself may not have much to do with whether they're achieved or not. Those targets may not really be very relevant to them, because when they're not achieved, they come here and say, by the way, it is the fault of others. We are there just to facilitate it. I don't come to the party. There's not much we can do. And I'm saying such targets are actually problematic to want to focus on. The very last, as I said, Chief, is that the signing of a declaration form on conflict of interest every year is supposed to happen. May we be assured here that these declaration forms by employees are actually being signed. If we were to go to the records of this entity, we could have that signed. Like if we were to live with them right away from the meeting, go into the offices, were we to find these having been signed. Or now that we asked this folks, are you going to be ensuring that they are backdated, signed, and so on? I'm just kidding, I'm saying, are we adhering to that? Or at times that slips by the wayside and we just find ourselves carrying on without focusing on that which is critical for the entity to run. Thank you.
Thanks a lot, Honorable Kinina.
There's an objection. Chair, looking at the collective bargaining services provision, Chair, I don't know whether I'm repeating the question that Honorable Makabele asked, but I wanted to put it in this way, as to say, can this entity actually tell us that the bargaining councils are working, are well functional in other provinces? That's the picture that we have got. But looking at the actual achievements when it comes to the way the provinces are performing, I think for me it leaves much to be desired, as to say, can proudly say that these councils are working well when it comes to the provinces. Mm-hmm. We can even cite provinces really where you find that most of the targets, nothing has been achieved. But then, how we then explain at the end that the bargaining council is functioning well in all the provinces, but the picture that you get there, really, there's so much that you can read on that one. Jefferson, I'm also very interested in the research that is being done. I did not get it, whether to say it's in process or, but what is happening around the ECP and RPN, I think that's one of the areas of interest that you have is this committee, and there was mention made of that, of which whatever research that is there, we will appreciate it very much as a committee to get us and come to that. Looking at corporate services, the targets that I cannot match, and looking at some of the reasons why, I think the entity, they are very important areas, but I don't understand how are they functioning without them. Like looking at position of HR manager that has been vacant for almost the whole year. Looking at the supply chain manager, the supply chain has not been set. Why they are continuing to function, and you know, it gives so many questions as to say how have they been operating, and indeed if some of these targets are not met, it's not surprising, because I think they have missed something that is very important for them to have. I'm also interested, Chairperson, in the career and succession planning strategy that is being proposed. It's good, Chairperson. I think it will help us even when someone retires or leaves the post for the entity not to have like a vacant post for a long time. But again, is there not an element of self-preservation there? As to say, this is the strategy we have groomed people within. There, again, I speak it out of parliament, is applying the LRC. We have not been groomed, you know. I don't know, but it's a good thing, really, but that is the area that I'm a little afraid of, to say, what does it actually mean when we look at that? I'm not sure, Jefferson, how much is being paid by educators out there, you know, sir? I'll have a follow-up question on that one. It's fine. Mm-hmm. I'm also interested here, and lastly, Chair, on the issue of incentives as focus areas for 2010 and 2014, as to say, in the collective bargaining, the services that they're bringing, the issue of incentives, West, I will just come up with one, the rural incentives, mm-hmm. of which you know is the bone of contention in almost all the provinces. You have seen the Popo almost seems to a standstill because nothing is happening. As to say, how far out are you with that one, and what can you say to us just to promise us that these things are going to be implemented? Yeah, my rural incentive is one of the incentives that are very much important. To ask Chairperson. The very last one, Chair, then, is this baseline statistics of absenteeism that some of the provinces did not submit? Again, are we seeing sort of defiance from the what is happening? Because it's one of the things that is very important here for us to do the welfare, the health of the system and whatever. And what is your take as the entity? Our engagement when it comes to the provinces who cannot even submit such critical information that is being needed for you to be able to do your functions well, thank you.
Thanks a lot, Honourable Gina. And it's the truth that I say, the people in the Sinus Cleaver, they're like lawyers. So don't look at them when they ask your question, because they pause to see what's your reaction. And whatever you give, then they'll have another follow-up. It just comes to your future challenges. I think you should elaborate on that, because we must know what measures you're going to put into place. Because in fact the revenue, a question on revenue was asked, and you're going to have a challenge on revenue. You are solvent at the moment, but you are looking at budgetary constraints. Procurement, there the SCM came up. You know, that is also problematic. Expenditure management, how are you going to manage that? Purpose and wasteful expenditure. That's easy in your report, you know, this audit report. A decrease. What was it all about? And how do you prevent it in the future? Because what brings that? You spoke at the beginning to your predetermined objectives. You said you changed it. I won't speak to it now.
because we'll see in the future, you know, whether, you know, the changes were made. And then the other is this ECT, the University, they're going to universalize, yes, ECT, conditions of services, and that's what's begun to import. How far are you with that, you know, the agreement, the bargaining that took place? Because by 2014, each school should have a reception year. Then when it comes to the performance agreement of principals and deputy principals, that is also very important to us. Because after the 2014 elections, certain laws are going to come into place, where certain changes are going to take place within the SASSA Act. Thank you. Thanks for giving me the word. I couldn't think on the word now on Boogie and I.
The invoice is
funny. Now the invoice, I'm prepared to pay for it. But we'll ask the secretary of ERRC to determine who's going to speak. Thank you.
Thank you, Chair. Can I, through you, request the chairperson of the ERRC to respond in terms of the role of school governing bodies or the powers of the school governing bodies as compared to them by South African Schools Act, Honorable Mushwana. To you, Chair, that question will be responded by our chairperson first, then I'll take few, and then the CFO will take a few that are related to finance. Then our audit committee member will respond in terms of how is Parliament going to be ensured that indeed the audit findings, the recommendations will be attended to. Because Chairperson, that is the role of the audit committee, to recommend or to advise the executive committee, which is the accounting authority of council. So I think the member of the audit committee must not be allowed to leave this meeting without committing that indeed they will play their oversight role in terms of ensuring that is the management we do implement the HE's recommendations. Thank you, Chair.
That's a lot. And I see the secretary is very formal today. Can I just take over, like, go just up a second, thank you. My thought.
Thank you. Honourable Chairperson and honourable members, Honourable Mushwana, the role that is played by SUPs is defined in terms of the South African Schools Act. And essentially, it's a role that the employer ordinarily plays. So it's a role, the employer of those educators who promotes them remains the Department of Basic Education. So it's more an agency. The ERRC at some point sought to include SUPs in their constitution to try and regulate some of the things that, you know, they do because of the problems, you call it a mess, you know, because of the problems that exist there. In reality, we can't. We don't have jurisdiction over SUPs. SUPs are a legal entity, so there's nothing we can do. And they play a role that's supposed to be played by one of the stakeholders in the council, which is the Department of Basic Education. You know, in terms of promotion or appointment and promotion processes, the HOD remains the final, you know, the person has the final say on a promotion, which is more a safety net of what would have happened in the process, but yes, the mess is still there. You know, and it's really a long story, you know, I won't be able to summarize it, but there's a judgment from the Western Cape Labor Court, which is it's point versus the Department of Education in the Western Cape, and the judge in that judgment talks a lot about what was the rationale behind establishing SUPs and what SUPs are established for, and you know, and what they seek to achieve to represent the views and thoughts of the community you know, where the school is, you know, operates in. But in reality, I take your point. There are those challenges, and a bulk of the cases that get referred to the ELRC in promotion matters relate to those challenges that are happening there. But our hands are tied. You know, we can't, we have no authority on SGPs. It's a matter that would really have to be dealt with in terms of the South African Schools Act and by the department whom they are discharging their duties on behalf.
Thank you, Chairperson. Chair, in terms of the questions that were posed by Honourable Mani, insofar as whether our provincial chambers are fully capacitated if we are only employing two personnel there, given the number of disputes that we receive. Chair, we wish to clarify that disputes are handled at a national province. We've got a full complement of the dispute resolution services at national. The provincial chambers are only utilized as a forum for consultation, collective bargaining. So the personnel there, given the fact that there are only two, it is the correct number for the amount of work that is to be done at that level. Insofar as the other question that was, I'm linking the question that was asked by yourself, Chairperson, in terms of the functioning of the provincial chambers. Chair, this question has surfaced before, and it was discussed even at the level of the executive committee to ask whether we are getting value for money at the level of the provincial chambers. And discussions indicated that what is required from the level of the executive committee is to try and find out as to what are the causes for this poor performance at a provincial level, so as to develop mechanisms to support the provincial chambers. Because in some instances, it is a question of how we have been phrasing our targets. That is why in the main you find that we are finding difficulty in terms of achieving what was to be achieved. But it does not necessarily translate to the issue of saying that there is no activity at a provincial level. But it is about what have we put in our APP. That's why earlier on we said we had welcomed the suggestions that were made by Parliament in terms of trying to put targets there that are specific, that are reliable, that are achievable, so that we do away with these non-achievements that are always reflected in our reports, especially at the level of the provincial chambers. I think, Chair, having said that, I also need to tie that up with the question that was posed by Honourable Makubela today. Are we not biting more than what we can chew? When, as the ELRC, we put the issues around the reports on attendance, which then the information is not provided to us. And again, without necessarily sounding like a broken record, I wish to remind members of the portfolio committee that we have tried our level best to attend to such concerns to ensure that in the current APP that was revised after the input received from Parliament, we take out that which we are not in control of and only limit our targets to the areas that we will be able to ensure that there is achievement. Chair, in terms of the whether we have collected the costs that have been pulled on by the Labour Court, we give the responsibility to our lawyers, which is Markovitz. They deal with the Labour Court matters on our behalf. And I have just confirmed with the CFO that he does not have records in his possession that indicate that we've received any monies that have been collected on our behalf after the Labour Court has dealt with the issue of the cost. Moving to the issues raised by Honourable Smile, the CFO will attend to the issues of the actions not being taken against those who are responsible for a wasteful expenditure. He will clarify that, Honourable Mani, because that was part of your questions. Then moving to Honourable Smile's questions, whether we should have as part of our strategic goals productivity of teachers. I think I understood the question to be asking such. Again, if we were to put that as the ELRC, we might be confronted with a similar situation where we come back and we are unable to prove that we've achieved such. because that is a matter that is more regulated by the employer in terms of managing performance. However, our role as the LRC is to bring the two parties to agree on the instrument of managing such performance, of which I think the chairperson highlighted in her concluding remarks that one of your areas of interest is the issues around the performance agreements that were to be concluded for principals and deputy principals. And to date, we can confirm that the matter is still serving on our agenda. Parties are currently taking mandates on the draft collective agreement on the revised IQMS that used to be there. Currently, the document is called QMS, Quality Management Services. So I think after that agreement has been concluded, perhaps there would be part of our report that will highlight that the ELRC shall have dispensed of its responsibility in ensuring that there's a collective agreement that regulates how the matters are dealt with. Then those who are implementers of the report then can indicate, can give reports to say whether that has achieved the intended objective or not. In terms of the temporal educators and the incentives that tied to demand and supply of teachers, what role is the ELRC playing in that regard? So we can safely say that the issues around demand and supply of teachers are not necessarily in the competency of the ELRC, it being a bargaining council, despite the fact that it is a matter that can be regarded as a mutual interest from both the members of the teacher union and the employer itself, but we don't necessarily discuss it. We had left it at the level where we had commissioned the research by the HSRC. Then whatever that has to be done, taking the process forward. I said earlier on that when it comes to the employment of educators, which is linked to the processes of post-provisioning, the ELRC's role is just to monitor that there is consultation in that regard. It's not necessarily left for bargaining, which is mainly our area of operation. Insofar as non-achievement, which is 30% the total of the objectives that were set, whether that does not have a direct impact on labour peace or not. So we can say in some instances, indeed, it affects labour peace, because if they are things that have to be done by both parties and they are not being done, we see, so we have seen on TV some parties going on a go slow, others going on a strike and so forth. So indeed, it's a cause for concern. That's why we think we are envisaging a situation that after the implementation of the current APP, we should be able to do an evaluation to see if we are getting things right or we still need to go back to the drawing board and correct that which needs to be corrected. If I move over to the questions by Honorable Makuvela in terms of the conference, the explanation being provided which is different from that which is written. So I explained earlier on that the reason that we had put this conference as one, as a part of our targets, was mainly because we have a collective agreement which had identified some residual issues that had to be concluded only after there was a conference that was to take place for parties to engage and identify specific matters that would then inform the progress insofar as how do they conclude on those residual matters. Now we said we could not convene such a conference because for us as the secretary to convene a conference, parties must identify the issues that are to be dealt with in the conference itself. So we have not discarded it off. It's still in the collective agreement. We still have an obligation to follow the matter up and ensure that it is achieved by virtue of it being in a collective agreement. The other questions that were posed by Honorable Makuvela insofar as the audit findings around competitive bidding not being followed, the levy income from the FET colleges, the establishment of the SCM unit will be responded to by the CFO. The issues around the accounting authority not having exercised its role in terms of monitoring, that is the part that I said will be responded to by the audit committee member. The targets not being achieved, again, I'm linking that to the report that I gave earlier on that we are hoping that with the revised APP, now that we have eliminated those targets that we felt that were beyond our control, we will see some improvement in terms of the performance of council. Moving to your questions, Chairperson, I have responded to the first question because I linked it to the other one. The issues around research, how far are we insofar as ECD and RPF? We have put those as the focus areas for the 13-14 financial year. And we can report that to date, we have had presentation by the NPC in terms of the NDP's position on ECD, and the recommendations coming from those presentations is that indeed the ELRC must consider doing research insofar as other countries like Finland, Turkey and others who are well advanced in terms of ECD, specifically around the areas of condition of service. And having said that, we also took full cognizance of the fact that even at government level, currently the issues around ECD is a shared responsibility between the different departments, like you have social development playing a role and also the Department of Basic Education. Because at the level of the ELRC, the only component, because ECD, what we were sensitized on when having a workshop was that ECD is broader than Grade R. Grade R is just part of ECD. So our focus in the main at the ELRC will be around the conditions of service for Grade R practitioners, as the term is used currently, which may in the long run, depending on the policies that government formulates, may be employed as educators. That then, insofar as the involvement of the ELRC is concerned. Insofar as RPL, we have established a technical task team that is constituted by specialists in the field, which is SABA. We have ETDPC participating, though we have SAIS and so forth. So even there, at this point in time, we do not have any concrete reports to share with the members because that is still work in progress. Chair, in terms of incentives, whether we can give assurance that indeed the policy is being implemented insofar as rural incentives are concerned, we can report to the committee that currently, as part of the standing items on the agenda council, are the reports that are tabled by the employer in terms of the monitoring of implementation of the incentives policy. And the report is detailed because it shows you that in province X, so many are eligible to get this incentive and so many have been paid and so forth. So that issue is currently being monitored through the reports that are tabled by the employer at the ELRC. Chair, in terms of the future challenges, we take note of the input by the chairperson that we should not only leave it at the level of identifying the future challenges, but we should be saying these are measures that we put in place to address the potential challenges that we have identified. I think the CFO can talk more into that because from time to time we do review our risk strategy because some of these things, they fall in the category of being a risk. And we have a strategy of identifying or putting measures to mitigate the impact of such or to prevent such risk. But the CFO will add more on that. I think I've covered the issue around the conditions of service mainly for ECD practitioners and also the issue of the performance agreement. Thank you, Chair. The CFO can respond to the other financial related questions.
Thanks a lot, Secretary. I'll give over to the
Steve Alp. Thank you, Chair. The first one that came my way, if I can put it that way, is what action is being taken against the culprits of irregular expenditure? And also tied with the last one where it came from the chairperson about measures to prevent irregular expenditure, so it's fruitless and wasteful expenditure and irregular expenditure. In terms of fruitless and wasteful expenditure, we have determined the source of where those things are coming from. And if you remember, we used to report that irregular expenditure from parties, irregular expenditure from employees. Now, in terms of irregular expenditure for employees, we will no longer have that. The executive committee has authorized the secretariat to deduct any fruitless and wasteful expenditure incurred by employees, which we have put in place.
terms of parties when it comes to unnecessary postponements. You remember in the performance information presentation, Secretary spoke about the delays caused by postponement adjournments. Panelists would issue cost orders when the executive committee has again given us the authority to demand or to recover those costs from the parties involved, which is both the applicant and the respondent. So those are the steps that we have taken so far, and we are seeing some progress in terms of minimizing towards eliminating this fruitless and wasteful expenditure. There would be those where definitely we don't have control, but where we have control, definitely we are addressing them. So these are the steps that we are taking. For instance, you know, there would be areas, as an example, where we have paid PAYE late, and there is a fine that we have to pay. It's something that could have been prevented. But you'll find there are so many people involved who contributed towards that. So in the end, we would have those, but they should be not more often. They should be not the norm. So we have taken such action. In terms of irregular expenditure, before defending as to whether we were guilty or not, what do we do in going forward is whatever we are not sure as to whether it might contravene the treasury regulations in terms of supply chain management, we bump it off the auditor general. We are in, you know, consultative terms with them. Where we are not sure, we consult with them as to whether the way we want to treat it, because it's not the way how to treat it, is whether the way we would like to treat it would be acceptable. Because most of the time, it's not intentional. You will find that it's always where there's an emergency, or there is no other way you could influence the process. As if I can give you an example, where we wanted to go to use the services of CETA as recommended in the management letter, the process there, as you all know, is very, very slow. And sometimes you cannot wait, you have to do something. So I think sometimes we did not really consult in how to do it. Not that you cannot do it, I think it was more how to do it in terms of deviations from the regulations. So we are consulting now, and also we used not to disclose that upfront. So we are now starting to disclose that upfront, so that we are eliminating, in fact, irregular expenditure. The next one, I think, was why don't we use the surplus funds that we have to fund the 8% of the non-achieved objectives? That was the question, Honorable Smiles. Unfortunately, the non-achievement of those objectives was not because of lack of resources or lack of financial resources. The resources were allocated, but unfortunately there were other factors other than. When it comes to the achievement of the objectives, we do always shift funds around in order to accommodate where we might have under resource at the budget level. So really the surpluses would not really assist in bringing down the underachievement. So I just wanted to clarify that. It's not all because of funding. Funding is always available. And the first priority goes to the problems. Magically find something else. And then the next one related to the findings of the AG. It came from Honorable Makubela, I think. The General Secretary has touched a bit on some of them, but I think when you look at the report that we are presenting, when they talk about the competitiveness, they talk about only one supplier, which is a travel agent, where definitely we did not go out for tender. And it was because also of an emergency. However, we need to indicate that we did not just go and pick up any travel agent.
you picked up a travel agent which was used by the executive authority. And we even spoke to National Treasury about it. However, we did not document it. And if you look at it, anything over $1 million with a travel agent, we are still in negotiations with them in terms of saying, although we would be paying the travel agent $3 million, the bulk of it, 95% or even more, is for activities. It's for accommodation, because they do that and pay that on their behalf. But when you look at the fees that you pay the travel agent, they don't even reach 250,000 per annum. So we are in negotiation in terms of that. So that I would say it will be out with it. It's only one item when it relates to the audit finding relating to competitive bids. Three quotations, yes, they related to IT, where we could not get three quotations because we were waiting to be making use of the services of CETA. However, subsequent to the end, that position has been corrected. The next one is levy income not being collected from the FET colleges. It's a very challenging one, really, for the ELRC because of the record keeping of some of the colleges, because it's not all colleges. I would say about 80% of the FET colleges are paying their levies, but there are some where the systems are not available. Even before the end of the financial, we even requested assistance for provincial auditor generals to assist us in that way. So they would have more authority and power to assist. But however, we're finding it very difficult to understand. But we are still working on it, and hopefully we will be able to collect those that are not paid. However, we need also to remember, at colleges, there are those who are paid by colleges, and there are those that are paid through PESA. So those who are being paid through PESA is no problem. It's those that are being employed and paid by the colleges, and which are in the minority. And sometimes we look at whether we should put more resources to go out, and when you do the cost benefit, it's not worth it. Maybe we need to be patient and go the route of phoning, writing letters, and seeking assistance for those who can influence. The next one that I've noted here is the declaration forms, which are not signed by all employees. Yes, it's true. Declaration forms were only signed by those who were involved in purchases, not by all employees. If you look at the provincial chambers, because they do the purchasing, the provinces, it will only be signed by the minister, but not the office. So the advice is all employees, irrespective of their levels, they should be doing that. And we have done that subsequent to the end of the financial year. The next one is the, I'm not sure whether the General Secretary touched on the position of HR manager. Did you touch on that? Okay. Maybe she will respond to that, because I know the device, because other than me, maybe she can. Because the question was, why does it take so long to fill the position of the HR manager? I think she will respond to that one. How much is being paid by the contributors? Was that the question? Did I understand?
Yeah.
The contribution. It's 5% from the employee and 5% from the employer, which means on a monthly basis is 10 rand per contributor. So that's basically, that's it, how they get the question.
Yeah,
it's 10 rand per contributor, 5 rand the employee, that is the educator, and 5 rand the employee. I think that's all I have. The last one was the measures to prevent irregular expenditure from the chairperson. I think I've covered it.
Yeah,
that's right. Thank you,
Jen. Thank you, Secretary. And let us try to round up now, please. But we still need to hear the voice of the auditor. Thank you, Chair. Chair, we can report that we last year we were confronted with a situation where our executive committee had taken a decision that we are not to populate the organogram as and when there was a vacancy. If we considered the vacancy to be one of the critical positions
whilst we are waiting the outcome of the work study that was to be done, we have to make a submission first and get approval. So that is mainly the cause for us having taken long to appoint for an HR manager. We had to get okay approval for filling of the position. But we since advertised the posting, we filled that position with effect from January this year. The same explanation, Chairperson, holds for the appointment of the supply chain manager. There too, we have made several submissions. However, our submission was put on hold pending the outcome of the work study report, which will inform the executive committee what level should the position be in and so forth. And again, Chairperson, there was a question that I had forgotten to respond to. The issue around the career and succession planning strategy. Perhaps it's the term that is used there that is not appropriate for the purpose of the strategy itself. The purpose of the document is not necessarily to groom individuals to take over from any position. Our staff knows that the HR policy is very clear, all positions are advertised. However, it was a question of saying that we need to look at how does council develop a strategy to retain the staff. Because the challenge that we are confronted with is that people are appointed, we train them in terms of development of council, and we are currently confronted with a situation wherein other bargaining councils are appointing staff from our bargaining council. And the explanation that they give when we talk to them is that the ELRC trains them well. So we have become more like a training academy for our counterparts in the service. So we were saying that no, council has to look at developing a strategy wherein we talk to the issues around recruitment and retention of such skilled employees. So Honorable Gina can be rest assured that indeed we don't talk about grooming individuals. There's no one who's currently being groomed to take over from the CFO. We will comply with our policy. Yeah, we'll comply with our policy and advertise the position, and the process will be open to anyone to apply. Thank you, Chairperson.
Thanks a lot. Now, the internal
order. Thank you so much, honorable members. Good afternoon. I'm glad to report as part of our oversight function in response to any issues, including the audit findings and audit recommendation. These are the few things just to share with you what we are doing at the moment. Number one, as you are aware, we are meeting minimum 4 times a year, which is once per quarter. Part of our agenda, which is a standing item, is number one, legal compliance. I think you have seen the last issue that was reported by auditors was talking to the advice on the legal compliance side. Number two is the issue on internal controls, risk management, and also the fact that we are also interested in the action plan crafted to address the audit findings. That on its own, we are interested, number one, on its process of crafting, which we're looking at the whole issue of whether it's adequate, it's sufficient, it addresses holistically the challenges that are facing the institution. The other issue on the second part of that is the fact that our internal audit plan is informed by a risk assessment. Part of the risk assessment, the findings that comes from the auditors, so one of the projects that our internal auditors are looking at is pretty much following up on the findings of the auditor general and also making sure that those ones are addressed. And then lastly, in summary, as we are meeting on a quarterly basis, we are advising in the form of a report the council on all those issues included and not limited to the issues that I mentioned. Thank you.
Thanks a lot for that. I think the only people that I would like to ask that I would like to say something will be basic education. If there's nothing, then we'll conclude this meeting. In conclusion, we'd like to say to the CFO that's retiring, we hope you will enjoy your retirement, but we hope you belong to a branch and that you made yourself available to come to Parliament, because I think you'll be an asset when it comes to our different committees, because you were groomed well. Although you say don't do grooming, oh, you're trained well. Because I say, the secretary says, ELR training ground. You know, for
for persons, but prepare to the advocate next year. You'll be able to advise you about, you know, Parliament itself. We'd like to thank the Secretary and everyone present here today from the ELRC for the very comprehensive report you gave. And we are waiting for this document that Advocate Warner spoke out, just to see, you know, what recommendations we as a committee will make to basic education itself. And we thank you for the good work you are doing. And remember last year your report was not rejected. So if anyone that your report was rejected, it was just, it was like, I always think on the morning, he normally says, if something's rejected, there's nothing discussed. And it was in a week, it was mentioned, but I've got to rectify that within a meeting. But thanks for all the patience you had with us. You came to us with your budget proposals, and we wish you well. Of course, we're not sure whether we will be seeing you again now. Thanks a lot, and to the department, they are ready for our week. Thanks for being present, because tomorrow's our last meeting with the department, and then next week. And to the members, thanks for your patience, because we know that some of you were this morning in the meeting, and you again this afternoon in the meeting, and it happens like that our week since Tuesday. Tuesday morning, Tuesday afternoon, Wednesday morning, Wednesday afternoon, Thursday morning, Thursday afternoon. And those that won't be present here tomorrow, we will excuse you. And of course I really received the apologies, but thanks a lot for being present. And even when it comes to the staff that remains with us till almost the end of the day. And I'm happy to complete it such now and ELRC. Thank you, madam.